This is Freemasonry Today, issue number 56 for winter 2021. FMT is the official journal of the United Grand Lodge of England. The editor is Donna Hardy, and the editorial panel is Michelle Warville, Sean Butler, Guy Roberts, Barry Hughes, and Julian Perry, the culture editor. It is published by Sunday at 207 Union Street, London, SE10LN, on the web at www.wearesunday.com for the United Grand Lodge of England at Freemasons Hall, Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ. You can contact for Masonic inquiries editor@freemasonrytoday.com or call 020 7831 9811. The website for that is www.ugle.org.uk. In this audio version, we've included all the main articles in the order in which they appear in the printed magazine. We have not included any of the advertising material. So we start with the table of contents, the index, so to speak, and the first section, the welcome section, is from the Grand Secretary and the Grand Scribe E. Dr. David Staples welcomes you to the winter issue. Then in Out and About section, there's news and views from the provinces, stories of community, charity and comradeship from the UK and beyond. In the stories section, we have Armed Forces Covenant. His Royal Highness Prince Edward, the Duke of Kent, endorses UGLE's pledge to military masons. And making history, Buckinghamshire initiates more than 100 members at Freemasons Hall. And the 60-second interview is with Provincial Grand Master of Berkshire, Anthony Howlett Bolton. In the Daily Advancement section, Brothers Past, leading 18th century educator and Freemason Martin Clare, and QC writes, William Duguid, a jeweller to the exiled Jacobite court in Rome. In the Grand Lodge section, Quarterly Communication, Deputy Grand Master Jonathan Spence on exciting developments in Freemasonry, onboarding with Solomon with John Roscoe on ways of satisfying the expectation of new members. In the Royal Arch section, Standing on Ceremony, the Chapter of Promulgation. In the Culture section, there's book reviews. In the Community has Charity and the Craft, how the MCF and Freemasons are continuing to support members and their families nationwide. And in the Fraternal World section, there are the letters.
Page 3. From the Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E. As I write to you from my office in Freemasons Hall, I can look out onto Great Queen Street to the businesses with whom we share this great London thoroughfare. It is a delight to see this street, which had fallen silent for so long, alive with the hustle and bustle of Freemasons going about their business. Within Freemasons Hall, the sounds of members, reunited after such a long absence from one another, ring out from lodge and chapter rooms and anterooms. There is a continual murmur of enjoyment coming from the cafe and bar, which fully opened its doors in September, as well as from the award-winning shop, a fantastic place to pick up last-minute gifts, I might add. This is the glorious chorus that assails us as we move around the building, and that heralds our return to the familiar Masonic rhythm of life. Freemasons Hall is not returning to a normal that we would remember from before the pandemic. It is, in fact, a hub of new opportunities and enthusiasm. As we come to what is the end of a long and arduous journey, I am struck by all we have learned along the way. Getting to this position has often felt like chasing a distant horizon without ever being close enough to reach out and touch it, but I have long since understood that there is benefit to be found in embracing the journey, not just the destination, and in overcoming challenges to become stronger both as individuals and as an organization. Within Freemasonry, we have discovered stamina and a profound ability to support each other and the wider society, even in the harshest of times. We hope this enthusiasm will prove to be a huge asset as we embed the members' pathway. There are things that each and every lodge can do better to attract and support its new members, engage and listen to its current members, and seek out those who may, for whatever reasons, have lost their connection to the craft. The cyclical program provides good practices, support and guidance that lodges can consider and discuss. Throughout the pandemic, time and time again, we have seen that the actions of individuals can make a huge difference, and we are keen to ensure that some of this enthusiasm is directed to ensuring that all of our members value their membership and are fully committed to uniting in the grand design of being happy and communicating happiness. Here within Freemasons Hall, we have been doing our part to reach out to the public. We have been hard at work since April, developing the national digital marketing campaign with the provinces. This September, all that hard work came to fruition with its successful launch, complemented by our superb, newly redesigned website. In preparation, we undertook extensive market research, and the data we received is being applied all over the country to attract new members who will share our love for Freemasonry, its history, and its place in modern society. As the year is drawing to a close, I look forward to a much jollier festive season than we have seen for the last couple of years. We all deserve the opportunity to spend time with our loved ones and rest our weary bones. Between Christmas and New Year, Freemasons Hall shuts its doors, and the staff at UGLE are given a well-deserved break. Phones and emails go unanswered for a few days as we take a moment of calm. I particularly look forward to thinking back on all that we have achieved in the past year, the large-scale events that filled the building, the monumental changes that have taken so much effort to shepherd the institution safely through the pandemic, and the great strides we have taken together in bringing an understanding of Freemasonry to the wider public. But I am also going to spend time being grateful for the quiet, everyday acts that I witness, acts that show kindness and care to individual brethren and companions. In those moments, I see the commitment that you all have to making this organization better for its members, and I am humbled to stand in a position that allows me to support you in that great work. I wish you and those nearest and dearest to you a restful festive period, and hope that the new year brings you the opportunity to face the journey ahead with a spring in your step. Dr. David Staples, Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E.
We now begin the out and about section, a roundup of what's happening in the world of Freemasonry. And this first article is called Modernising for a New Generation of Members. The United Grand Lodge of England is launching a nationwide digital marketing campaign that aims to modernise communication channels with the public. A new national digital campaign is sending a clear message about the world of Freemasonry and what being a member has to offer. The campaign has already started to take effect. The United Grand Lodge of England, UGLE, now has a waiting list of 6,000 potential members. Recent research showed that one in four people would consider joining the Freemasons today, compared with one in ten in 2018. The same research showed that those aged 18 to 34 think the most favourably towards the organisation, suggesting that the marketing drive is a real opportunity to engage with young people. The project aims to inspire and challenge individuals to practice Freemasonry's core values, integrity, friendship, respect and charity, in their private and public lives, enabling them to develop into thoughtful, confident people. A recent study found that 75% of Freemasons participate in civic or charitable activities, compared with just 31% of non-Freemasons in a matched geodemographic. The campaign involves all 48 regions across England and Wales and includes a new website and social media strategy. The project is operated through paid Facebook advertising, giving Freemasonry the opportunity to engage with new audiences from all backgrounds and lifestyles. Dr. David Staples, Brand Secretary and Chief Executive of the UGLE, said, "We've been planning this initiative for a long time with the ultimate goal of demystifying misperceptions around Freemasonry. Now the time has come to speak directly to our audiences, whether that's visitors to Freemasons Hall or simply members of the public who want to learn more about Freemasonry and what we do. Everyone should know that we are Freemasons because we want to be a part of something unique and make lifelong friends. We eat, drink and meet together, and our goal with this campaign is to use digital media to make people aware of this." UGLE's new website aims to change the public perception of Freemasonry and looks forward to cementing the reputation of Freemasonry as a force for good in communities around England and Wales. Dr. Staples added, "There is much misinformation about what Freemasonry is and stands for, and the new website dispels those myths through clear, engaging content. Combining elegant, illustrated details with impactful, high-quality images, users will experience a warm, friendly welcome from Freemasonry." The new UGLE digital experience provides online users, prospective members and visitors to Freemasons Hall with a cutting-edge platform and enhanced design. In a dedicated section, users will be able to book tours and visits to Freemasons Hall and the Museum of Freemasonry, as well as select from a calendar of events. There are also links to the shop and the new cafe and bar at Freemasons Hall. Elsewhere on the website, visitors can discover exciting facts and the history of both Freemasonry and Freemasons Hall via an interactive timeline. Users can also locate their nearest Masonic Centre via an interactive map. The website includes a section for the university's scheme, offering information and support for applicants who would like to join the organisation through the scheme lodges. The site reflects the symbolism, traditions and heritage of Freemasonry while maintaining a modern and engaging experience that works towards UGLE being recognised as an historical organisation that's just as important and relevant today. Michelle Warville, UGLE Director of Communications and Marketing, added, "This national digital marketing campaign speaks to audiences of all ages, genders, races and backgrounds. We're confident that it will be a success and that a wider audience will learn more about Freemasonry, including the amount we raise for charity and how we support our local communities. Hopefully, it will also encourage visitors to the websites or those attracted to the digital marketing campaign to consider becoming future members." And now a number of short articles from the Out and About section from the various provinces of UGLE, starting with Lincolnshire.
Along for the ride. 2 years after its warrant was signed by the Grand Master and 16 months after it should have happened, Lincolnshire has at last consecrated its newest lodge, Freewheelers No. 9991. With a membership made up of motorcycling enthusiasts, the peripatetic lodge is nominally based in Horncastle, but has ambitions to meet in each of Lincolnshire's 21 centres. The idea of forming a motorcycle lodge started in a bar on a road trip to Switzerland. Chris Jones had the honour of being the Primus Worshipful Master. The lodge has a unique set of gavels made from pistons by inner guard Stuart Buckingham, bringing a whole new meaning to the phrase, firing on all cylinders. In the presence of 150 members in Grimsby's Masonic Hall, the lodge was consecrated by past provincial Grand Master Graham Ives, in the absence of current provincial Grand Master Dave Wheeler through illness. He was assisted by Deputy Provincial Grandmaster John Crutchley, Assistant Provincial Grandmasters Peter Brooks and Bruce Goodman, and Provincial Chaplain the Reverend Dr. Brian Roberts, all under the watchful eye of Provincial Director of Ceremonies Noel Fisher. This was followed by the first installation of officers for the lodge.
Derbyshire next. The social network. When COVID restrictions began in early 2020 and face-to-face meetings ceased, a void was created that some Freemasons had difficulty filling. Zoom became a new byword for many and it turned into a lifeline for people unable to leave their homes. The Amadeus Lodge, number 9539, who meet at Dore in the province of Derbyshire, held weekly Zoom meetings to keep its members informed and involved, initially averaging 15 participants, several of whom were visitors. They realised that this was a great opportunity to encourage members not only at Dore but throughout the province to meet and join in. As an incentive, they looked for a way to spread the word about Zoom socials by encouraging friendly competition. Senior Deacon and Social Media Officer of Amadeus Lodge, Andy Glaves, came up with the idea of the virtual travelling headset, which could be claimed by any lodge whose members had the largest attendance. The headset would then be claimed by another lodge, which, at their next meeting, would organise their own talk. In September, the Lodge of Repose even managed to attract the presence of the Grand Secretary, Dr. David Staples, who took a Q&A session. The number of attendees rose and regularly approached 100 attendees. Andy Glaves commented, "Appreciation must be given to all those who have helped to make the Amadeus travelling headset a success. The Provincial Grand Master for his support and promotion of the initiative, Julie Foster at Provincial Office for advertising the meetings while she was working from home, Steve Williams for his encouragement, the secretaries and masters of the headset lodges for hosting and organising their meetings, but, of course, the huge number of visitors and lodge members who attended. On the 23rd of September, the travelling headset was formally retired. Purely by chance, it had returned to its home, Amadeus Lodge. Every lodge which had claimed it received a framed certificate presented by the Provincial Grand Master to proudly display at their meeting places. Congratulations go to Andy Glaves for his great initiative, which was a beacon of light at a very dark time.
Number 3. Essex. Heartfelt. Having seen an appeal by Malden Saints YFC for funding to purchase defibrillators, the members of Mitre Lodge, number 9307, decided to donate £500 towards the cost. However, this wasn't enough to buy all the equipment that was needed, so the secretary of Mitre Lodge asked the members of the other Malden Masonic Lodges if they would offer support. All were pleased to join in, including the Lodge of St. Peter, Beely Abbey Lodge, Dayan Ingus Lodge, Wheel of Fellowship Lodge, Frederick Leisterco Lodge, Coromandel Chapter, Frederick Leisterco Chapter, and Plume Chapter. The grand total was increased from £500 to £1,140, enabling Malden Saints to buy the portable defibrillator and fund training for the members who will operate it. The donation was made on Saturday the 4th of September by Dave Harrop, the master of Mitre Lodge, and Paul Beach, the chairman of Malden Masonic Hall, on behalf of the Malden Lodges.
And now we move on to East Lancashire. The sky's the limit. Manchester Freemasons Dean Lynch, an avid skydiver and adrenaline junkie and trusty sidekick Darren Fletcher, wanted to raise funds for their selected charities. So they put the call out for Freemasons and non-Freemasons to take part in an exciting challenge, the Manchester Masons / Manchester Level Club Skydive. Within a week, they were fully booked up with 60 adventure seekers signing up. The original date of 14th of August was postponed due to adverse weather, but it hasn't dampened anyone's spirits as there have been quite a few people who have jumped since. Freemasons from multiple provinces spread across England took part. John Merritt, a 70-year-old member from Bristol, jumped with his regalia under his flight suit, while Rob Manchester from Leicestershire was raising funds for the Province of Leicestershire and Rutland's festival. Rachel Cookson, who jumped to support East Lancashire Masonic Charity, ELMC, raised more than £2,000. She was skydiving in honour of Charles Ward, who died earlier this year. In a display of leadership, Assistant Provincial Grand Master for the Manchester District, Mark Davis, took to the skies, raising a considerable amount for the upcoming Province of East Lancashire 2026 Festival in support of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, MCF, the Freemasons charity. To date, more than £20,000 has been raised collectively, and the work isn't finished yet.
Number 5. Yorkshire North and East Ridings. Down the Generations. On the 12th of August, at a meeting of the Old Himerian Lodge No. 6885 in Kingston-upon-Hull, the worshipful master Chris Shuttleworth vacated the chair in favour of the provincial grandmaster, Jeff Gillian. The provincial grandmaster then proceeded to initiate his grandson, Nicholas Gillian, son of the late Philip Gillian, who is currently reading classics at the University of Edinburgh. Philip was himself initiated by his father in 1989, as Jeff was master of the lodge at that time. The ceremony was witnessed by 80 members, and the dinner that followed was excellent and accompanied by much singing.
Number 6. West Kent. Gift of Life. The West Kent Masonic Clay Shooting Club was set up a few years ago to enable members to combine their hobbies and to support their local communities. While the members have a passion for clay shooting, they also care greatly about the well-being of those around them and are continually looking for opportunities to make a difference. As a result, they decided to support local clay shooting clubs by raising funds to buy them life-saving defibrillators. Their first donation went to the Dartford Clay Shooting Club, after which the pandemic temporarily prevented further meetings. During this time, members of the Lodge of Sincerity and the Masonic Clay Shooting Club agreed that their first meeting back would be a charity shoot to raise funds for a second defibrillator, this time for JJS Clay Shooting Club near Bluewater. With the lifting of restrictions, they were able to hold the event in late June, with all funds raised on the day going to the purchase of the defibrillator, which was recently presented to Mark West, owner of JJS Clay Shooting Club, by the Provincial Grand Master for West Kent Masons, Mark Esto. West was overwhelmed by the generosity of West Kent Masons, who often use his club, and said, "Hopefully, it will never need to be used, but it's fantastic that we now have this life-saving piece of equipment, should we ever need it."
Number 7. Leicestershire and Rutland. We will remember them. Around 150 Leicestershire and Rutland Freemasons and their families gathered at Bradgate Park's Memorial Wood on the 29th of August, for a service of remembrance to those lost during the pandemic. The Memorial Wood was reopened in 2017 with the help of the Freemasons and the County Council, making it a fitting location to remember loved ones. Head of Leicestershire and Rutland Freemasons, Peter Kinder, introduced the speakers as guests were led through the order of service and chosen hymns. The Lord Lieutenant of Leicestershire, Mike Kapoor, gave an address and read a touching Sanskrit poem. Also taking part was Pro Grandmaster Peter Lowndes, who had made a special journey to the county from Hampshire that morning. The hymns and prayers were led by the Reverend Canon Michael Wilson, who, along with Peter Kinder, read out the names of 82 Freemasons from the county who have sadly passed away in the past 18 months. After the service, the gates of the Memorial Wood, set in a tranquil area overlooking Cropston Reservoir, were opened as the guests took a moment to walk around the woodland and pay their respects. The wood is home to distinctive wooden pillars that display beautiful bronze leaves commemorating past loved ones and family members. Peter Kinder said, "I would like to thank all of those who attended this special service. It was such a fitting tribute to those who are no longer with us and who have given so much to others during their lives."
Number 8. Staffordshire. Fun for families. Staffordshire Freemasons have donated £15,000 to Sandwell Parents for Disabled Children in West Bromwich. The charity was founded in 2003 and supports physically disabled children and those with special needs, along with their parents and siblings. They cater for children up to 8 years old and provide a wide variety of activities. On the 9th of August, Head of Staffordshire Freemasons John Lockley and Charity Steward Dr. John Skellen caught up with the children and their parents as they met up for the first time since the start of the pandemic at the Blackwell Adventure Park in Worcestershire for a fun day out. Together with Operations Manager Linda Lloyd and Activities Coordinator Sam Ward, they watched as the children took part in many exciting activities, including the 3G swing that allows children and their parents to swing through the air at high speed, helping to overcome the fear of height and speed. Other attractions included a treetop walk where the children are safely hoisted into the tops of trees and along catwalks. John Lockley said, "It's a pleasure to see the children enjoying themselves so much. The money is going to such a worthwhile cause. This charity gives wonderful support to the children and gives them experiences they would not otherwise enjoy." Linda and Sam thanked John for the generous donation.
Number 9. Masonic Vehicle Association. Full Throttle. Formed during lockdown, the National Masonic Vehicle Association, NMVA, held its first annual meeting on the 5th of September at the invitation of the Province of Worcestershire in the grounds of Worcester's Rainbow Hill Masonic Centre. The event attracted more than 70 vehicle enthusiasts and their cars from as far afield as Yorkshire, Sussex, Pembrokeshire and Kent. Association President Geoffrey Deering was at the event, which raised £1,700 for Worcester's 2022 festival. Robert Vaughan, the head of Worcestershire Freemasons and himself a keen classic car owner, was also there. The aim of the NMVA is to forge links with like-minded lodges and Masonic vehicle clubs who are keen to promote the interests of Freemasonry among their members, as well as encouraging membership, networking, events, trips and inter-lodge visits. There are already 30 lodges and Masonic clubs from all across England and Wales that are members, plus a strong social media presence at nmva.org.uk.
Number 10. Berkshire. Treasure Trove. The Imperial Dinner, held at Sindlesham Court on the 18th of September, played host to the official world launch of the English hallmarked limited editions of the Berkshire Heart Egg and Berkshire Heart Pendant. The RW Provincial Grandmaster Anthony Howlett Bolton, OBE, welcomed everyone, including Sir Paul and Lady Williams, and Michelle and James Warville. Sir Paul is the Deputy President and Chairman of the Trustees of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, and Michelle is Head of Communications for UGLE. During the evening, guests were treated to a display of Fabergé eggs from the St. Petersburg collection, such as the Four Seasons, the Rose Garden, the Icon and the Hole in One. Over dinner, the chairman of the St. Petersburg collection, Philip Birkenstein, presented a short history of the Fabergé family and this story of how Carl Fabergé became the jeweller to the Tsars of Russia. Philip also explained his friendship and association with Theo Fabergé, a grandson of Carl, and the creation of the St. Petersburg collection. The provincial grandmaster showed the two reveals of the Berkshire Heart Egg, explaining the connection between craft, royal arch and mark masonry. Under the direction of the chairman of the St. Petersburg collection, the Berkshire Heart Eggs is based on the Bristol Blue Crystal creation by Theo Fabergé, the Egg of the Covenant. It's been conceived from the Dragon's Passion, which was Theo Fabergé's first fantasy collection of passion pendants, launched in 1991. There are 33 eggs, representing the 33 degrees of the ancient and accepted rite, and 100 pendants available to buy. A Berkshire Heart Egg is on display in the Library and Museum of Berkshire Freemasonry at Sindlesham Court. You can email Jerry Preston, Provincial Grand Charity Steward, on berksspgl.org.uk.
Number 11. Durham. Doing the Honours. A deputation led by the Provincial Grandmaster John Arthur attended Lodge of Freedom at Stockton Masonic Hall to obligate, invest and appoint Andrew Maul as the new Assistant Provincial Grandmaster. After presenting Andrew with his chain of office, Provincial Grand Secretary Tom Gittings read out a special charter for the Lodge's centenary. This was then handed to the current Master of the Lodge, Andrew Maul, and all retired to dine at the festive board. Following the toast to the Provincial Grand Master, John Arthur asked John Thompson to assist him by presenting the 2021 Festivals Platinum Award to the Lodge. Just at the point of John Thompson's photo opportunity, John Arthur interrupted and asked John Thompson to remain standing while Tom Gittings read something out, the Provincial Grand Master's Certificate of Service to Freemasonry. John Arthur then presented the framed certificate to John Thompson. John responded, "I'm absolutely blown away to receive the Certificate of Service to Freemasonry from the Provincial Grand Master. It's been an absolute pleasure to support the Provincial Grand Lodge of Durham over the past 8 years, and I will continue to do so from the backbenches. It was wonderful tonight to see Andrew Maule invested as our new Assistant Provincial Grand Master. Many thanks to everyone who has supported me over the past few years.
Now we go to number 12, West Wales. Curtain Call. West Wales Freemasons were delighted to support the Fishguard Musical Theatre Society at its performance of the musical Sister Act on 25th of October in Isgol Bwrw Gwan, Fishguard. Provincial Festival Steward Stephen Roscoe and Worshipful Master of Strumble Lodge Euring Evans presented cheques to members of the cast. The West Wales Grand Charity gave £1,500, the third such donation over the past 3 years, and Strumble Lodge gave £500, the fifth such donation since the Theatre Society was founded. Altogether, the Theatre Society has received £9,500 from the West Wales Freemasons since it was established in 2016, and this support has enabled the Society to restart following its closure during the pandemic. The Society is a community group run by volunteers with more than 100 members aged from 5 to 70. It gives people an outlet to perform, gain confidence, and make new friends while learning a new skill.
Number 13. Cornwall. Tech support. The Provincial Grand Lodge of Cornwall has supported the small charity Lifelights with a £2,000 donation so they can continue to provide assistive technology for life-limited and disabled children. These children are particularly isolated and vulnerable during the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. The life-changing technology donated by Lifelights enables children at Little Harbour Children's Hospice to play with their brothers and sisters, communicate with their parents, and control something themselves. Based in Cornwall, the Little Harbour Children's Hospice Service has been receiving assistive technology from Lifelights since it opened in December 2011. Lifelights and the Freemasons of Cornwall are particularly aware that the pandemic has led to many people feeling extremely isolated, losing touch with their communities, and experiencing additional stress. Everyone has been getting a living insight into what it is like to be a life-limited and disabled child, unable to leave the house independently, speak to people, and socialize naturally. Lifelights donated assistive technology enables extremely vulnerable children to overcome isolation, communicate their wishes and fears in this extraordinarily stressful time, and connect with their loved ones. The Masonic Charitable Foundation, MCF, the Freemasons charity, matched the generous £1,000 donation by the Provincial Grand Lodge of Cornwall, enabling £2,000 to be provided to Lifelights. Simone Enofer-Doy, Chief Executive of Lifelights, said, "We are so grateful to have received the support of the Freemasons of Cornwall for many years now. Their donations help us make the impossible possible for life-limited and disabled children using hospice services in Cornwall."
Number 14. Gloucestershire. Celebration of the Craft. Gloucestershire Freemasonry's family service at Gloucester Cathedral was held on a sunny 10th of October when the Dean Stephen Lake gave those Freemasons attending an equally warm welcome after 2.5 years' absence due to COVID. He noted that the cathedral had not been closed since 1208. The High Sheriff for Gloucestershire, Mrs. R.J. Tufnell, and the Deputy Lieutenant Roger Head were there to witness this celebration of Freemasonry in the country.
Number 15. Herefordshire. In Remembrance. During August, a team of 4 veterans of the Falklands War rode around the UK by motorbike, visiting the graves and memorials of men who lost their lives in the conflict in 1982. They covered a total of 2,600 miles in 15 days, visiting more than 80 graves and memorials during that time. The team had several aims to promote, including remembrance, respect, awareness, and support. They wanted to show that these men are not forgotten, and they wanted to pay their respects to each one and the families of those lost. Also, the aim was to raise funds for the South Atlantic Association, which continues to support veterans of the war and the families who have lost loved ones. On Saturday the 14th of August, Gordon Mather of Dean Waterfield Lodge had the great privilege to host the team at a service held in the SAS Memorial Plot at St. Martin's Church. To his surprise and delight, three of the bikers were Freemasons. Herefordshire's provincial Grand Master is himself a keen biker, indeed a founder member of Columbanus Lodge No. 9941, a lodge for motorcycle enthusiasts based in Somerset, but which meets peripatetically across Wiltshire and Gloucestershire too. So he met the team in Ross-on-Wye on Friday evening at a ceremony at the grave of Timothy Jenkins, killed in action aged just 19 while serving with the Parachute Regiment. The following morning, Lee Oxenham of Dean Waterfield led the riders, along with 15 other bikers, to St. Martin's, where, once again, the PGM joined the team. Following the ceremony, the PGM accompanied the team on their next leg to Worcester.
Now number 16, Norfolk. At your convenience. It has been a base for daring rescues and life-saving feats since 1972, but C. Pauling Lifeboat Station has never had one of the most basic facilities, its own toilet. For the past 49 years, volunteers at the station have had to use the nearby public toilets. The station also lacked a kitchen and rest area and had only a makeshift shower. But that has now changed thanks to support from Norfolk Freemasons, who have funded a Groundhog Mobile Welfare Unit for the station. This unit contains a chemical flush toilet, a crew room for storage of equipment and clothing, and a COVID-friendly kitchen area that crew members and other emergency services can use after a rescue at sea. Jennifer Roberts, secretary at the independently run station, said, "Traditionally, the majority of the crew were male and everyone coped. But it's more of a problem now, and also anyone rescued might need to use the public toilets. We do have a make-do shower used by the crew to wash the seawater off their dry suits when they return. But now, with the additional space, a purpose-built shower can be installed away from the kitchen. We are so grateful to Norfolk Freemasons for providing us with the new unit, which has already made a positive impact on how we can operate." Presenting a plaque to mark the donation to coxswain Andreas Schroer, Stephen Allen, head of Norfolk Freemasons, said several of our Norfolk lodges support C. Pauling Lifeboat with donations to assist with running costs and maintenance of the lifeboats. "Seeing the additional needs of the station, I am delighted to be able to give this significant grant from the province on behalf of all our members. It'll improve the comfort and operational facilities of the lifeboat crew and those in need of their life-saving skills."
Number 17. Shropshire. Memories to music. The last 16 months represent the worst of the pandemic. During the various lockdowns, Shropshire Freemasons have been unable to help support families of members who have passed away at their funerals. On Sunday the 10th of October, a full Shrewsbury Abbey witnessed a memorial service for the 50 or so who have died during that time. Their names were read, a candle lit, and the assembled members sang a special arrangement of the closing ode, composed for the occasion by Deputy Provincial Grand Master Jeremy Lund. This included a memorable Pie Jesu descant by soprano Felicity Murphy and an equally moving recitation of the verses from Ecclesiastes by David Bromley. Four rousing hymns with newly restored organ and a brass ensemble directed by Stephen Pritchard-Jones were led by the Abbey Choir, which also sang a setting of Psalm 121 by Oswestry's composer Wolford Davies and Stanford's Justorum Animae. Provincial Grand Chaplain Brian Thomas conducted the service, and there were readings on Masonic themes by the provincial wardens. Dennis Hill gave an account of the work of the charities with their Masonic partners, giving a clear reminder to all present that Freemasonry had not been idle, but had been working at the heart of the community throughout the pandemic. A very visible mark of that work was the Shrewsbury Food Hub van, Ronnie, parked outside the Abbey. Named after Salopian Lodge of Charity's worshipful master Ron Gee, it almost doubled the capacity of the food hub.
Number 18. Somerset. Bare necessities. The Somerset Teddies for Loving Care, TLC, programme was pleased to donate 100 teddy bears to Designability. The charity provides the truly amazing WYSIBUG, an innovative electric wheelchair for physically disabled children with amputations or other conditions that affect their ability to walk, including children with cerebral palsy, spinal muscular atrophy, spina bifida, or muscular dystrophy.
Number 19. North Wales. Double celebration. North Wales Freemason Paul Williams initiated his son Mitchell Bryce Williams into Plasteg Lodge No. 6898 in Kagoolie. Mitchell celebrated his 18th birthday on the 1st of October and is currently the youngest member in North Wales.
Number 20. Suffolk. Care in a Crisis. K1 Britannia Foundation's Disaster Relief and Crisis Team has successfully completed its relief efforts in Haiti after the tragic 7.2 earthquake on the 14th of August. Suffolk Freemasons, working together with the Masonic Charitable Foundation, donated £2,000 to enable the K1 team to respond within 48 hours of the crisis developing. The team's relief efforts took place within the main areas of emergency logistics and included the provision of personnel to load and offload much-needed supplies and equipment to affected areas. Based in Port-au-Prince, the team was able to help streamline and assist with managing emergency logistics at the Toussaint-Louverture International Airport. This meant helping to manage flights carrying relief aid, supplies and personnel back and forth between the affected areas in the south and Port-au-Prince.
Number 21. Sussex. On the front line. Sussex Freemasons, through the Sussex Masonic Charity Foundation, have donated £30,000 to directly support NHS staff working in the major hospitals across the county. St. Richard's in Chichester, Worthing Hospital, the Royal Sussex County in Brighton, the Princess Royal in Haywards Heath, the Eastbourne District General Hospital, and the Conquest Hospital in Hastings will each receive £5,000 to help improve the working experience of the frontline staff. Dr. Harry Walmsley, the chair of the Friends of Eastbourne General Hospital, stated, "This money will be used for all sorts of things, from drinks and snacks through to camp beds for those staff who cannot get home because they are too busy, or their family are in isolation. We know that this support will be a huge morale boost for staff." Michael Harris, chair of the Sussex Masonic Charity Foundation, said, "At this time of need, it is so important that we do all we can to help keep up the morale of frontline NHS staff. Sussex Freemasons fully support our incredible NHS, and we are delighted that we can play a small role in helping them and making their working lives a little more comfortable in their ongoing battle with this awful virus."
Number 22. Jersey. Help through adversity. Brightly, the Jersey-based charity that supports children and young people in care, has received a £20,000 donation from Jersey Freemasons. Formerly the Brigidon Children's Charity, Brightly supports between 160 and 250 children and young people in Jersey each year. Its aim is to help them make a life for themselves by providing financial support for education and training, health, well-being and independence. The funds donated will be used to support up to 10 young people in Jersey who've been in care and are now aged between 16 and 21, wishing to live independently and who have the life skills to do so successfully. Brightly will be offering each of them a one-off gift called an Independent Moving On Grant, an IMOG, agreed at the discretion of the charity up to the value of £2,000 per grant. The young person can use the funds to purchase, with the help of their social worker, items such as furniture, white goods, deposits or initial rents for independent accommodation, televisions, mobile phones, laptops and clothing for job interviews.
Number 23. Worcestershire. Welcome home. Worcestershire Freemasons have celebrated the opening of a new Freemasonry centre in Stourbridge after quitting their long-time Masonic hall at the Talbot Hotel, where they had been meeting for centuries. The Deputy Mayor of Dudley, Councillor Sue Greenaway, and her consort, husband Desmond, attended the official opening of the new base at the former Carlisle Hall in Victoria Street on the 29th of August. A cheque for £150 was given by the Freemasons for the Mayor of Dudley's chosen charities for 2021/22. Wollaston resident Constance Webb cut the ribbon at the new centre, having bought the building for the Freemasons in memory of her late husband, James Webb. The Stourbridge Masonic Management Company had been looking for a new place to meet for some time, having called the historic Talbot Hotel in Stourbridge High Street home since 1733. Lodgers from Dudley have also joined the Stourbridge Freemasons in relocating to the new centre, which will be known as the James S. Webb Freemasonry Centre. The dedication ceremony itself was held under the banner of the oldest Stourbridge Lodge, the Lodge of Stability, number 564, and attended by 82 members. The Provincial Grandmaster, Robert C. Vaughan, accompanied by officers of Grand and Provincial rank, was the dedicating officer for the evening, which was followed by a festive board at Stourbridge Rugby Football Club. Built in 1922 as a temperance hall in memory of the Countess of Carlisle, President of the British Women's Temperance Association, the building was previously used by local charity Dudley Mind, and before that, the Women's Royal Voluntary Society.
Number 24. South Wales. A Masonic First. Dewey Sant Lodge, number 9067, made Masonic history with its installation at Bridgend Masonic Hall on the 7th of September 2021. This was the first time anywhere in the world that an installation was held completely in the Welsh language. Located in the province of South Wales, Dewey Sant Lodge was consecrated on St David's Day, 1st of March 1983. It was founded by 27 Freemasons with a love of all things Welsh, particularly the language, and originally met at Maesteg before moving to its current home, the Bridgend Masonic Hall, in 2006. In April 2019, the Lodge was granted permission by the United Grand Lodge of England, UGLE, to conduct ceremonies in Welsh. To date, Dewey Sant is the only Masonic Lodge in the English Constitution permitted to carry out its ceremonies in Welsh. This installation ceremony was translated into Welsh and approved by UGLE by Effan Jones, the Secretary of Dewey Sant Lodge. In a memorable and historic ceremony, 54 members were present to witness Dr. Stephen Bassett flawlessly install his successor, David Jones, as worshipful master. David said Steve Bassett put a lot of work into memorising this historically significant ceremony, for which I, as the first worshipful master to be installed in the Welsh language, am extremely grateful. I was very moved by the way Steve delivered the ceremony. The executive officer for the evening was Assistant Provincial Grand Master Stephen Harries, who was accompanied by the Provincial Deputy Director of Ceremonies, Mark Newbold, and past Provincial Grand Steward Peter Williams. Stephen, who is not a first language Welsh speaker, learned the address to the worshipful master in Welsh and delivered it perfectly, with conviction, passion, and full of Welsh hwyl. A large number of Grand Lodge and Provincial Grand Lodge officers attended the evening, including the Provincial Grand Master Gareth Jones, OBE, who's a member of the Lodge, the Deputy Provincial Grand Master William Jenkins, Assistant Provincial Grand Masters Mark Lewis and Kelvin Jones, past PGM Captain Sir Norman Lloyd Edwards, past DPGM Andrew Gretton, and the most excellent Grand Superintendent E-Comp Gerald Rowbottom. The Provincial Senior and Junior Grand Wardens, Almoner and Charity Steward were also in attendance. Stephen said, having already undertaken the first initiation ceremony in the Welsh language in November 2019, this was an event that has long been awaited and was in no way a disappointment. The installing master was a Welsh learner and, to his immense credit, performed an immaculate ceremony, which was both impressive and emotional for those who had worked for so long and hard to reach this goal. It was also encouraging to see the initiate from November 2019, Wayne Robinson, present the first degree working tools to the worshipful master. The provincial Grand Master, Gareth Jones, who, subject to the next election, is likely to be the worshipful Master of the Lodge in 2022, said, "This was indeed a momentous occasion, both in the Masonic calendar for the province of South Wales and for Freemasonry in general under the constitution of the United Grand Lodge of England. It's the first time anywhere in the world that an installation ceremony was undertaken entirely in the Welsh language. I feel very privileged to have been present to witness it and to see it performed with such sincerity, professionalism and panache."
Number 25. Northumberland. Passing it forward. A young Northumberland student has just graduated from the Columbia-affiliated Barnard University in the US, thanks to a helping hand from Northumberland Freemason Bill Lees and a kind legacy from late Tynecastle Lodge member Norman Johnson. Bill first met Janice Mellico at an exercise group around 10 years ago and chatted about her daughter Carla and her son Amanik and their various activities. He told her about being in the Freemasons and, with Brian Rudd's help, they helped her with £500 each for Carla and Amanik to attend youth music theatre. Carla, then 15, went to London, while Amanik, 13, travelled to Plymouth to hone their skills in dance, drama and acting. A year later, Carla was given a flyer about applying to the Sutton Trust from her state school, Monk's Eaton High. The Sutton Trust US program is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for young people to explore what studying in the US is like. Although it is a fully funded program, there are certain criteria. Applicants should attend a state-funded school, must not hold US citizenship, must be from a low or middle-income family, and be interested in US culture and higher education. Among other stipulations, they also look for students who would be the first generation of their family to attend university, live in a neighbourhood with a low rate of progression into higher education, and have excellent GCSE qualifications. Carla was accepted onto the scheme from about 2,000 applications, after which she enjoyed a week in the US to visit prospective universities. She chose Barnard largely because of its dance department, but also because it is an inclusive institution that supports students of colour. Barnard's motto is "Be bold, be Barnard," and they inspire students to go on to be world leaders. The future looked bright, but Janice's earnings couldn't cover the additional costs of personal expenditure, such as food and toiletries. Bill Lees wanted to help out again. In 2018, he visited the provincial office to see whether Freemasons could offer further support. Several meetings were held with Carla and Janice, and a projected income and expenditure identified an annual shortfall of £4,000 to £12,000. Brian Rudd, the past provincial Grand Secretary, had an idea. He referred to a legacy from Norman Johnson, who had been a personal friend of his, and suggested that this would be the perfect use of that gift. Norman was a member of Tynecastle Lodge No. 6317, went through the chair in 1982, and was part of the 1982 team of Masters. He was also a joining member of Celtic Lodge, Edinburgh and Leith, and was a past master there too. Professionally, Norman was a bursar at a college in Durham, and then in concert from where he retired. Norman was a great exponent of youth progression and a keen scout. Tragically, his wife died at a young age and they never had a family of their own. But this did not stop Norman from taking an active interest in the development of young people. When he died in 2017, Norman bequeathed £20,000 to the Northumberland Masonic Charity Association, with a specific request that it be used for a local good cause rather than be added to festival activities in support of the RMBI. The province put the suggestion of using Norman's legacy to the trustees of the NMCA, who readily agreed to support Carla to the full amount of £12,000 over the 3 years of her course. It has certainly been put to good use. Happily, Carla has graduated and has recently been proposed and accepted into the Phi Beta Kappa fraternity, the oldest academic honour society in the US.
The next article in this section is Funding Future Engineers. Geoffrey Bond, OBE, DL, describes the positive impact of the Midland Masonic Education Partnership. In 2003/4, I was Sheriff of London and travelled the world with the then Lord Mayor, Sir Robert Finch. I was impressed by the number of countries promoting engineering apprenticeship schemes. In 2016, I became president of the Newark and Nottingham Agricultural Society, founded 1799, which stages one of the biggest agricultural shows of the year. As a contribution to my year, I created an agricultural engineering apprenticeship scheme, which places school leavers with agricultural machinery companies with a view to encouraging them to become apprentices. The scheme has worked well. Based on its success, I met with the provincial Grand Master for Nottinghamshire, the Right Worshipful Brother Philip Marshall, who was keen to extend the education offer of the province of Nottinghamshire, in line with UGLE's strategic direction of encouraging us to take a greater role in local communities. We saw an opportunity to be involved in more outreach work with young people, particularly those experiencing financial hardship. Discussions also took place with the Lord Lieutenant for Nottinghamshire, Sir John Peace, who is chairman of the Midlands Engine and who supported our wish to create a Masonic engineering apprenticeship scheme. I had discussions with Robert White, the principal of Nottingham University Academy of Science and Technology, NUAST, a great supporter of science and technology schemes, who was pleased to work with us. In 2017, Worshipful Brother Barry Woodhead, Provincial Grand Charity Steward for Nottinghamshire, headed a committee taking the apprenticeship idea forward and creating the Midland Masonic Education Partnership, the MMEP, an element of which is the apprenticeship scheme for engineering, science and technology. It's proved very successful. A key aim of the MMEP is to make a contribution in assisting young people into work within the county, helping to improve productivity and strengthening the local economy. As we know, there is a great shortage of engineering apprentices, and NUAST, N-U-A-S-T, is doing much to remedy this situation. It has many students from a diversity of backgrounds, and they're given an opportunity to study in a variety of engineering-based subjects. The science element is founded on a broad spectrum, whereas technology is more focused on computer programming, seen as vital in modern engineering. The MMEP has worked with local schools, companies and organisations willing to take students on placements to give them further experience. Financial support is also forthcoming from the MMEP. For example, in September 2017, it provided support for students from NUAST, NUAST, going on an exchange programme to an academy in China. From time to time, distinguished guest speakers in the engineering field also support the MMEP. Our outcomes include a transformational life experience for young people studying science and or technology for those intending to go into traineeships or high apprenticeships in Nottinghamshire. Improved student understanding of the needs of the workplace in qualitative and quantitative terms. It's hoped that individuals will become more work ready. And an appreciation of different cultures and methodologies in the global setting of industry and competition. The success of the MMEP is such that I recommend it to those in provinces who are considering further education initiatives. In particular, more support for engineering apprenticeships is required. Such initiatives are invaluable to the young people concerned and promote important educational outreach programs by Freemasons.
Page 24. Making a comeback. Brother Ronnie Scott has returned to Freemasonry after a 37-year absence, and the World War II veteran has a century of action-packed experience to share with his lodge. The District Grand Lodge of South America, Southern Division, has many stories to tell, but none more special than that of the extraordinary life of Brother Ronnie Scott of Pampa Lodge No. 2329. Ordinarily, when a gentleman joins a lodge, there is very little fanfare. However, when that gentleman is returning to the craft after a 37-year absence, is over 100 years old, flew Spitfires for Britain in World War II, and has recently starred in a documentary about his own life, one does take notice. Ronald David Scott, or Ronnie to his fellow members, was born in Buenos Aires in October 1917 to an English mother and a Scottish father. Today, he still lives in the city and is a keen cyclist and occasional footballer at the local sports club. During the pandemic, Ronnie rekindled his passion for Freemasonry and joined Pampa Lodge No. 2329, 37 years after his mother lodge had been erased. One of the stories he likes to tell is of the event that started his unique adventures. "I used to go to the Hurlingham Club, and I was watching a polo match when someone galloped right up to the fence. I realised it was Edward Windsor," he says. The then Prince of Wales, and later Edward VIII, asked the 13-year-old Ronnie if he would mind fetching him some tonic, and they started up a conversation. They talked about the recently docked British aircraft carrier, HMS Eagle. Ronnie's enthusiasm must have been quite something, as the Prince arranged a private tour. "While on board, Ronnie saw biplanes from World War I. I came away and I knew I was going to be a naval pilot," he recalls. Ronnie was 21 when World War II began in September 1939, and living in a neutral Argentina led Ronnie to question his own identity. Many of those around him were admirers of the Nazis. Ronnie's attitude was very different, partly because his parents were British and all too well aware of Hitler's atrocities. Being Argentinian, he was not obliged to risk his life, but did so because of an overpowering sense of justice. In 1942, he was one of the 2,000 Argentine volunteers, both men and women, who would fight in the British armed forces. Of those, 860, like Ronnie, joined the Royal Navy. He left Argentina at the beginning of 1943, aged 25. Ronnie spent 5 weeks in Britain before travelling to undergo pilot training in Canada at an airfield close to Lake Huron. He flew with 794 Naval Air Squadron, part of the Royal Navy's Fleet Air Arm, where he was involved in pilot and aircrew training. In late 1944, he joined London's attempts to combat the enemy's V-1 flying bombs. Based at the naval headquarters in Greenwich, Ronnie found himself in command of the fire, ambulance and home guard response in charge of the area around St. Paul's Cathedral. He said, "There were occasions when you knew you were hanging on a thread. War is a horrible thing. There are people with families who get shelled out of existence." After returning home from the war, Ronnie got a job as a commercial pilot and married his sweetheart Marion in 1950. He was initiated in St. David's Lodge No. 3952 in 1955 and stayed a member until it was erased in the 1980s. Sadly, Marion passed away in 2014, but she left Ronnie with two wonderful sons and three grandchildren. Ronnie still lives in Buenos Aires and often visits the Buenos Aires British Cemetery to pay his respects to former friends and comrades at the Royal British Legion Memorial Wall. The inscription reads, "In memory of our volunteers from Argentina who died fighting for the freedom we enjoy today, we will never forget them." In 2019, award-winning British filmmaker Alex Beskerby made a documentary about Ronnie. His film, Buena Onda, The Tale of Ronnie Scott, was released in March and is available on Vimeo. Buena Onda is slang for good vibes or cool. Alex Beskerby says, "Ronnie is a remarkable, wonderful man with a philosophy of life that we could all learn from. It's hard to believe he is 104. The energy of the man. I ended up in awe." Ronnie doesn't think of himself a hero in wartime or peacetime. He simply considers himself lucky to have had such a long and fulfilling life. It is a philosophy we can all learn from.
This next section of the magazine is the stories section, and we've three articles. First of all, Military Masons, the Armed Forces Covenant is signed at Freemasons Hall. Second, Memorable Day for Bucks, more than 100 new Freemasons initiated in historic ceremony. And finally, the 60-second interview with Provincial Grandmaster of Berkshire, Anthony Howlett Bolton, OBE. Brothers in Arms. Demonstrating a commitment to its military members and their partners, the United Grand Lodge of England has signed the Armed Forces Covenant at a most memorable occasion. The Freemasons signed the Armed Forces Covenant during a ceremony at Freemasons Hall on the 20th of October, led by His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent. the partnership aims to support members of the armed forces community and ensure that they have the same access to government as well as commercial services and products as any other citizen. By signing the Armed Forces Covenant, the United Grand Lodge of England, UGLE, will be able to demonstrate its support to members of the armed forces in a number of areas, such as education, family well-being, getting a home, starting a new career, access to healthcare, financial assistance, and discounted services. UGLE has a strong armed forces background through its military lodges. This partnership therefore represents an important step in further supporting both active and retired military personnel. Notable armed forces figures such as Admiral Sir Peter Parker, First Marquess of Hastings Francis Rawdon Hastings, Captain Robert Falcon Scott, General Viscount Kitchener of Khartoum, Lieutenant Elias Henry Jones, Marshal of the Royal Air Force Cyril Louis Norton Newell, Commodore Wilfred Henderson and Thomas William Gould, VC, were all extremely well-known Freemasons. UGLE's most worshipful brother, the Grand Master, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, has a long-standing relationship with the military. In 1955, he graduated from the Royal Military Academy Sandhurst as a second lieutenant. It was the beginning of a military career that spanned more than 20 years. He was promoted to captain in 1961, and after having served in Hong Kong, he was promoted to major in 1967. 3 years later, he commanded a squadron of his regiment serving in the British Sovereign Base area in Cyprus. In 1970, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent served in Northern Ireland before being promoted to lieutenant colonel in 1973. Having retired from active service on the 15th of April 1976, he was subsequently promoted to Major General in 1983 and to Field Marshal in 1993. His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent said, "It is my great pleasure to sign the Armed Forces Covenant on behalf of the United Grand Lodge of England. This document represents part of our ongoing commitment to support active and retired military personnel. We are proud of our long-standing relationship with the armed forces and will continue to promote their welfare, support and respect amongst all our members." He added, "Our lodges, through the centuries, have always had a close relationship with those who served in the armed forces. Servicemen have found that our values of integrity, friendship, respect and charity are a natural fit with their own, and many ex-servicemen comment that the camaraderie they find in a lodge is second only to that they have experienced while serving. It's also true to say that the experiences and friendships that they form help a much wider cross-section of society better understand the military, its ethos and its purpose. I am delighted to have formally recognised in this document the relationship that has always existed between our great institutions." By signing the Armed Forces Covenant, the UGLE demonstrates its intention to support the armed forces community, which in turn allows the UGLE to be recognised by the UK government's Defence Employer Recognition Scheme, ERS. An ERS award shows that the recipient is delivering tangible support for the armed forces community. Major General Simon Graham, Director, Reserves Army, signing on behalf of the Ministry of Defence, said, "The Armed Forces Covenant is a commitment to support those who have served and their families. The support of employers and making a public pledge of support to the armed forces community that they are valued by society is vital. This year we celebrate the Armed Forces Covenant's 10th anniversary, and for centuries the United Grand Lodge of England has had a solid connection to the armed forces, and it makes perfect sense for us to have the Freemasons signing up to the Armed Forces Covenant this year. I'd like to thank the UGLE for supporting the armed forces community." Dr. David Staples, UGLE's Grand Secretary and Chief Executive, said, "It's a great honour to be able to sign the Armed Forces Covenant. From its earliest foundations, Freemasonry has always had a strong relationship with the armed forces. Today we want to thank those brave men and women who dedicate their lives to protecting our country and the people who live here. They deserve all our thanks and respect, and this is one of many steps we aim to take in helping both active and retired members of the armed forces and their families." On the same day that the UGLE signed the covenant at Freemasons Hall, heads of Freemasonry on the Isle of Man and in Cheshire, East Lancashire, West Lancashire and North Wales also made their commitment to the Armed Forces Covenant. This is in addition to Staffordshire and Yorkshire North and East Riding regions. In total, 24 provinces have either signed or will sign the Covenant. The Masonic Charitable Foundation, MCF, the Freemasons Charity, and the Royal Masonic Benevolent Institution will also sign the Covenant this December at their annual general meeting. Well, that's the end of the main part of the article, and then added to the end of the article is a reading of the Grand Secretary's Armed Forces Covenant speech delivered by the Grand Secretary on the 20th of October 2021.
Your Royal Highness, my lords, ladies, gentlemen, brethren, welcome to Freemasons Hall. Each year, more than 40,000 members of the public visit this building to learn a little more about the values and purpose of Freemasonry and to marvel at this Art Deco masterpiece, the only Grade II listed building in London still used for its original purpose. It was conceived and built out of great conflict as a lasting memorial to peace, and to those thousands of Freemasons who lost their lives in the Great War. Those lodges that contributed to the building of this great memorial are carved for posterity into the stones of its very walls, and the scroll of honour, the centrepiece of our building, behind me, lists the names of our fallen. Organised Freemasonry was conceived over 3 centuries ago, out of a time of great conflict. Huguenots and Stuarts, Catholics, Protestants and Jews, vying for power and influence in unsettling times. From this crucible of social discord arose an organization which promoted religious tolerance, something wholly radical in a world characterized by conflict. Freemasonry spoke for meritocracy at a time when birth and wealth determined success. It elected officers subject to democratic accountability. It introduced new norms of civility and discourse and promoted education and self-improvement, principles that spread around Enlightenment Europe from Grand Lodge to Grand Lodge. Freemasonry offers a simple philosophical message to its members, to act with integrity, to show respect to our fellows, to be charitable, kind and tolerant, and have a huge amount of fun along the way. The purpose is not only to promote virtue, but also to promote a thoughtful approach to being virtuous. It is centered around an analogy of building or creating, and thus by chipping away our rough edges and our inadequacies, we reveal the better people we can be. More fit to serve those less fortunate than ourselves, those who have fared less well in life than us, and those communities from which we are drawn. I am delighted, therefore, that the Masonic Charitable Foundation and the Royal Masonic Benevolent Institution Care Company are today announcing their intention to sign the Armed Forces Covenant during their members' meeting on the 8th of December this year. Freemasonry's charities have a long and proud history of supporting the armed forces, and their decision to make this commitment through the Covenant will enhance this support over the years ahead. At the end of the Second World War, a great many sailors, soldiers and airmen, seeking to maintain contact with their former colleagues and recapture the camaraderie they had known in the forces, turned to Freemasonry. It was a golden time for us as hundreds of new lodges, each with military connections, were consecrated. And today it is no wonder that so many servicemen and women find a parallel between the lives they have led in uniform and the support and friendship they find within Lodge. It is for those men and women and those still serving, and in recognition of the very high regard that the members of the United Grand Lodge of England have always had for our armed forces, that I am delighted to be able to host our signing of the Military Covenant. A tangible demonstration of our continued commitment to those here represented by Major General Graham. I now invite him on behalf of the Ministry of Defence and the Most Worshipful Grand Master, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, on behalf of the United Grand Lodge of England, to sign the Covenant.
We now move on to the next article in the Stories section. This is entitled Sunday Service. As lockdown persisted, Buckinghamshire's membership inquiries mounted up. In celebration, they turned a mass initiation ceremony into an event to remember. Sunday, the 12th of September 2021, was an historic day for Freemasonry. Freemasons Hall played host to an unprecedented event for the Buckinghamshire Freemasons when more than 100 new members were initiated in a single day. But before we tell you more, we have to go back to June 2017, when a decision was made in Buckinghamshire that would culminate in this memorable occasion. The then new provincial Grand Master, John Clark, decided to make membership the number one focus for the new administration. The rationale was that by focusing on membership, the other elements of the province, such as ritual, communications, marketing and mentoring, would have to be in order too. As such, the provincial Grand Master set out to build a team of dedicated Buckinghamshire Freemasons whose brief was simple: attract and retain members. It was decided that to attract young, enthusiastic candidates, the marketing and communications strategies had to reflect the behaviours of that group, while the membership and mentoring strategies should be standardised to ensure an optimal experience for all who used it. The Deputy Provisional Grand Master, Hugh Douglas-Smith, was challenged to produce a digital platform that would manage and track the membership inquiries for the province, but also allow for streamlined processing of membership data, executive reporting, and the appointment and promotions procedures. The Provincial Marketing Officer, Phil Whitney, and the Provincial Communications Officer, Matt Perkins, were tasked with producing a marketing and communications strategy that brought the good works, camaraderie and mystery of Freemasonry to the attention of the public. By taking a single communications message across social media, the website and the provincial magazine Concord, it ensured that no matter where someone encountered Buckinghamshire Freemasons, they received the same content presented in the same way. The development of a new provincial logo and inclusion of the recommendations from the survey on attitudes to Freemasonry were also key parts of this sea change. The formation of a landing page at www.buckspgl.org/info meant that all communications would have a call to action and direct interested parties to a contact form linked to the membership team. In January 2020, Provincial Membership Officer Simon Williams implemented a structured and detailed membership pathway, including methodology, to allocate inquiries to suitable lodges based on geography and availability. Little did Simon know that instead of assessing, vetting and allocating candidates to lodges, he would soon have to keep them interested for 18 months during the first suspension of Freemasonry in 300 years. The changes to the marketing and communication strategies soon started to yield results, with improved engagement across all platforms and, most encouragingly, with the number of people filling in the contact form increasing from 1 to 2 per week to 1 to 2 per day. This was naturally a cause for celebration, with many prospective candidates stating that they were interested in Freemasonry after seeing the good works that we do, but also the friendships that are built by the fraternity. The hard work of the whole team was starting to pay off by February 2020. Then, in March 2020, disaster struck and Freemasonry was suspended due to the pandemic. Many of our members work in key worker roles and were at the front line of the COVID effort. Under the tireless leadership of the provincial executive, large numbers of Buckinghamshire Freemasons mobilised to provide urgent relief to those in need in the local communities. Initiatives included donating tons of food to local food banks, providing hot meals to the elderly, vulnerable children and women's refuges, delivering PPE to NHS hospitals, delivering pamper packs and food to carers, undertaking marshalling duties at NHS vaccination centres, and providing support within NHS hospitals and clinics. These activities rightly attracted a lot of attention on social media and in the local and national press. So, what was thought to be a disaster for our new recruitment initiative actually led to a further increase in the membership inquiries, with potential members seeing the benefits of our institution and wanting to join a community of like-minded people who were bringing help to their local communities. Membership inquiries went up, and the membership team set about creating a program to engage these potential members and keep them interested until such time as they could be initiated. This included Zoom calls, family quiz evenings and virtual pub nights, which proved very popular with all. As the lockdown persisted, membership inquiries mounted. With more than 200 candidates through the provincial channels, plus Lodge's own recruitment efforts, more than 300 candidates were awaiting initiation, many having waited more than a year to join because of the lockdowns. Buckinghamshire now had a lovely problem. What to do with everyone? The provincial Grand Master had a solution and asked the rulers to allow him to initiate as many as possible in Freemasons Hall. He was met with a great wave of support. The Grand Master, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, gave a special dispensation to meet on a Sunday, as this was the only day of the week when the whole of Freemasons Hall would be available for use. This in itself was historic, as Freemasons cannot usually meet on a Sunday. The Buckinghamshire initiations at Grand Lodge Day was born, affectionately known as BIG, or Big. The provincial Grand Master of Ceremonies, Worshipful Brother Bill Smithson, assembled a team and planning began with less than 12 weeks to go. A monumental effort from the membership and communications team meant that engagement with potential members was huge, with a final social barbecue being organised that pushed the number of candidates booked in to 103. And then the day arrives. More than 100 candidates had booked in to be initiated into Freemasonry in a single day. In the morning, both Freemasons and candidates boarded all types of transport to get them to the event. The day started early. Setting up all the temples and the provincial Grand Lodge was opened at 9:30 a.m. so that the officers from the lost year of the pandemic had their opportunity to perform their roles in the Grand Temple. At 10:30 in the morning, the formalities began and the initiates were arriving thick and fast. Some lodges were initiating 4, 5, or even 6 candidates and were calling off during the day for refreshments. The day ran incredibly smoothly, with a lovely lunchtime festive board in the gallery suites for those lodges initiating in the morning sessions. And after lunch, the lodges continued to initiate their own candidates with visitors there to increase the support for every lodge. During the day, the members were entertained by a harpist and a saxophonist. The beautiful new cafe in Freemasons Hall was ideal for the provision of much-needed refreshment. It was also the perfect location for members and candidates from all over Buckinghamshire to meet and update each other on news. At 15:30 p.m, everyone gathered in the Grand Temple for the main event. Marcellians Lodge number 4450 was initiating its candidates in the Grand Temple, with more than 619 Freemasons staying all day to witness it, and the provincial Grand Master in the chair. It was a flawless ceremony, with the provincial Grand Director of Ceremonies acting as junior deacon. Once the newly installed candidates retired from the lodge, 88 of the new initiates who'd stayed to the very end took to the floor to receive the charge on initiation with their new brothers. The sight of nearly 90 entered apprentices on the floor of Grand Lodge was an unforgettable experience. The charge was given in spectacular fashion by Deputy Provincial Grand Master Hugh Douglas-Smith. Then there was a most enlightening demonstration of the first degree tracing board before the lodge was closed. Before the processions out, singer Jenny Ball serenaded the crowd from the balcony of the Grand Temple. The evening dining, the festival boards, took place both in the vestibule and the gallery suites. The exquisite food, wine and entertainment made for a most enjoyable occasion. In summary, the Big Day, B-I-G, was one that will stay in the memory of all that attended, especially the newly made Freemasons, who are now members of a very special group, as an event like this is unlikely to ever happen again. And, of course, we still have 150 more candidates to initiate, not to mention the second and third degree ceremonies to carry out. Perhaps another big third event is in order.
Page 36. Law and Orders. Provincial Grand Master of Berkshire and former Deputy Chief Constable Anthony Howlett Bolton, OBE, sees a bright future for Freemasonry. With a distinguished background in law enforcement, Anthony Howlett Bolton's career culminated in being awarded an OBE in 2016 for his work with ex-offenders. He worked in two police forces and retired as a Deputy Chief Constable. Following this, I spent several years as an international senior strategic security and justice advisor with the UK government. Anthony was born and still lives in Buckinghamshire with his two dogs and dotes on his family. I have been blessed with two sons, two fabulous daughters-in-law, and five grandchildren. Here, he gives us an insight into his Freemasonry journey and his hopes for the future.
What inspires you most about being a Freemason?
It is an organisation based on social interaction. I am inspired by the camaraderie, the welcoming approach, the building of existing and new friendships, and the common desire of Freemasons to make a real contribution to wider society. I am humbled when I see so many quiet acts of generosity that go on behind the scenes.
Has Freemasonry improved your life?
The enriching aspects of Freemasonry seem to me to be about self-development and learning to be a better and more rounded person. The charge after initiation encompasses it all, and I try hard to live my life by those principles. It is still very much a work in progress and always will be.
What do you enjoy about being Provincial Grand Master?
The simple answer is our members. I can't begin to tell you how much I value and enjoy their company. The talent within Freemasonry is simply breathtaking, and we are only just scratching the surface. The thought of being a Provincial Grand Master never featured in my mind, and so I was totally wrong-footed when asked to lead the province of Berkshire. It is an incredible honour, a huge responsibility, and time-consuming to be asked to take on the role. But what makes it worthwhile is the support and encouragement one receives from literally everybody. We are part of one organisation. My role is to steward my province as we continue to build Freemasonry together as a team.
What challenges has the pandemic presented?
The pandemic has interrupted the normal cycle of events and caused people in all walks of life to reflect on their priorities. It seems to me that our members fall into one of three camps. Some are eager to return, others are wary, and the third group have reflected on their level of engagement. We need to be skillful in how we steadily re-engage so as to satisfy the needs of the eager, address the concerns of the wary, and reinvigorate the distracted. We will rebuild together and reshape our lives.
And what of your work with Solomon?
Like most things in life, my work with the Solomon team, initially led by Stuart Hadler, was a chance event. I have been involved since day one and not missed a meeting yet. I was proud to take over from Stuart upon his retirement, and I lead an extraordinarily talented and committed team. I simply conduct the orchestra. For me, the UGLE Learning and Development Programme is mission critical if we as an organisation and our members are to flourish. Fostering curiosity and developing understanding is at the heart of Freemasonry if we are to be a force for good.
What are your hopes for Freemasonry?
The future is bright. Freemasonry brings hope and meaning to many in a way that is difficult to find elsewhere. While we will always compete with other spheres, I believe that, if we get our messaging right, there has rarely been a better opportunity for Freemasonry to thrive as part of normalised and valued society. As part of my work with UGLE, I am hugely impressed and encouraged with the drive, commitment and fresh talent evident within UGLE from both paid staff and volunteers. It is awe-inspiring to play a part. If we don't succeed, it won't be through a lack of trying.
Do you have a hero figure you aspire to?
I dread this question because as soon as one mentions a name, there is polarisation. I would rather say that I have never yet met the perfect person. We are all a work in progress, but my heroes are those people who are genuinely compassionate about others, exude integrity, selflessly lead by example, and make a real positive difference to society. These are true Freemasons in my book.
What is the best advice you've received?
The three best pieces of advice I have been given are these. Don't believe your own propaganda. Don't delude yourself by self-aggrandizement. And ensure that when you look at yourself in the mirror, you see a person of absolute integrity looking back at you.
What's your favourite way to relax?
I am a reasonable technical photographer, a green-fingered gardener, and, in more recent times, a dreadful piano player. I maintain a keen interest in the law, both criminal and civil, as well as international security and justice reform.
Now we come to the section, A Daily Advancement, Extending Knowledge of Freemasonry. There are two articles in this section. Masonic Enlightenment, The Life of Freemason Martin Clare, a leading London educator, and Duplicitous Do-Good, Scottish jeweller William Do-Good and his life as a double agent. Mentor and Mason. Freemason and one of London's leading educators, Martin Clare, was a proponent of Masonic Enlightenment, as Dr. Rick Berman explains. Described as one of His Majesty's Justices of the Peace and the Master of the Academy in Soho Square, unquote, in his obituary in the General Evening Post, 18th of May 1751, Martin Clare, about 1689 to 1751, sat on the Middlesex bench until just a few months before his death. But it was his role as an educator and as a Freemason that would define him. Clare was one of London's most influential Freemasons in the 1730s to 1740s. He was appointed a Grand Steward in 1734, Junior Grand Warden in 1735, and Deputy Grand Master in 1741. He was also a leading member of the King's Arms Lodge in the Strand, now known as Old King's Arms or OKA. There, he was senior warden and deputised for the often absent Sir Cecil Ray, the master. Clare was also master of the lodge at the Shakespeare's Head in St James, where 14 members hailed from the OKA and attended the lodge at the British Coffee House in Cockspur Street near Charing Cross. However, Clare is known best as the author of A Defence of Masonry, published in 1730, in response to Samuel Pritchard's Exposure, Masonry Dissected, 1730. Clare's retort was so admired that it was reprinted in Reed's Weekly Journal on the 24th of October that year. Clare was also a prolific and popular Masonic lecturer. The few surviving lodge minute books dating back to the early 18th century suggest that it was customary in at least some lodges for members with skills or hobbies to share their knowledge through talks and lectures. The first surviving OKA minute book underlines this, recording 36 lectures given by a variety of members in the decade up to 1743. They cover everything from human physiology to architecture, art and mathematics. Clare was the driving force behind the OKA's lectures and had been one of London's foremost educators for almost two decades. Since 1717, he had been proprietor and head of the Soho Academy, one of London's leading boarding schools, and his textbook entitled Youth's Introduction to Trade and Business, published 1720, ran to 12 editions. He summed up his approach to education as being centred on practicality, making sure his charges were fitted for business by combining sciences with social graces. The Soho Academy syllabus was an amalgamation of mathematics, geography, French, drawing, dancing and fencing, combined with lectures on morality, religion and natural and experimental philosophy. The school was viewed as one of England's most celebrated and successful of private boarding schools and attracted students from affluent, well-connected families. Clare's approach to Masonic education was in the same vein. He noted in his discourse given to the Grand Steward's Lodge and then to the Quarterly Communication of Grand Lodge on the 11th of December 1735 that the chief pleasure of society, viz. Good conversation and the consequential improvements, are rightly presumed to be the principal motive of our first entering into and then propagating the craft. We are intimately related to those great and worthy spirits who've ever made it their business and aim to improve themselves and inform mankind. Let us then copy their example that we may also hope to attain a share in their praise. The discourse was reprinted widely and incorporated into various editions of A Pocket Companion for Freemasons. There's a reader's note, there's a hyphen in the word Freemasons there. It's Free-Masons. And in translations overseas. Clare based it in large part on John Locke's Some Thoughts Concerning Education, published 1693. He invokes the idea of an inward civility of the mind, arguing that a Freemason should have an Enlightenment perspective that is guided by respect and concern for others both in and out of Lodge. Men, whatever they're guilty of, would not choose to have their blemishes displayed and set in open view. Failings always carry some degree of shame with them, and the discovery or even imputation of any defect is not borne by them without uneasiness. Whether because of its lectures, the scientific eminence and status of its members, many of whom, including Clare, were fellows of the Royal Society, applications for membership of the OKA became numerous. In 1734, joining members included Viscount Weymouth, who became Grand Master the following year, Viscount Murray, 2nd Duke of Atholl, Lord Vere Bertie, eldest son of the Duke of Ancaster, and William Todd, Keeper of the King's Wine Cellar at St. James's Palace. In an attempt to lessen the flow, the annual members' fee was increased to 5 guineas for gentlemen, albeit remaining at 3 guineas for others. Nonetheless, this was high and would have excluded most. The OKA's minute book outlines the structure of lodge meetings. The lodge would open around 6 p.m. and an extract read from the bylaws or constitutions and proposed new members announced. The principal activity of the evening, the lecture or talk, would follow and be followed in turn by an initiation or the Masonic examination of lodge officers to demonstrate their command of ritual. After toasts and songs, the evening would conclude around 10 or 11 p.m. and the lodge would then close. As Clare noted, we are, let it be considered, the successors of those who reared a structure to the honour of Almighty God, the grand architect of the world, which for wisdom, strength and beauty hath never yet had any parallel. We are intimately related to those great and worthy spirits who have ever made it their business and their aim to improve themselves and to inform mankind. Let us then copy their example, that we may also hope to obtain a share in their praise. This cannot possibly be done in a scene of disorder. Pearls are never found but where the sea is calm, and silent water is generally deepest.
Page 42. Treasures and Treason. Jeweller to the exiled Jacobite court in Rome, Scot and Freemason William Duguid escaped multiple inquisitions for his role in government espionage, as Dr. Rick Berman explains. We know from expense accounts kept by Thomas Coke, later Lord Lavell, Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of England, 1731, that while in Italy on his grand tour in 1716, he purchased prints and antiquities from a William Duguid. What is less clear is whether Duguid, a Scottish jeweller, was in Rome on his own account or part of Coke's entourage. The Stuart papers at Windsor indicate that Duguid remained in Rome, where he was associated with the exiled James Stuart and his court in exile. Francis Peyton, another Scot, introduced Duguid to John Erskine, Earl of Mar, a senior figure in Rome's Jacobite circles. Mar was influential. He had slipped into Scotland in 1715 and raised the Stuart standard at Braemar, proclaiming him king, an act that set off the rising. When it failed the following year, Mar fled Scotland to return to exile in Europe, with the Jacobites granted sanctuary in Rome under the protection of Pope Clement XI. On Mar's recommendation, Duguid became court jeweller and received a Stuart warrant. He also became a trusted intermediary. His access made him a target for Philip von Stosch, a Prussian in Rome, who had been recruited as a spy by the British. Stosch was a valued source on Jacobite activities, and his reports under the alias John Walton circulated at a senior level in London. Stosch persuaded Duguid to work for him and became his best source, but Duguid came under suspicion and in November 1722 was arrested and imprisoned by the Inquisition under the pretext of heresy. Believing that his own position would be compromised if Duguid confessed, Stosch persuaded one of Pope Clement's cardinals, Alessandro Albani, to use his influence to free Duguid. Albani succeeded, and Stosch arranged for Duguid to flee to London. Charles de la Fay, the government's anti-Jacobite spymaster and senior undersecretary, approved the plan. On Stosch's recommendation, Duguid was encouraged to establish a business as a jeweller in the Haymarket, and received commissions from senior Whig politicians, including the Duke of Devonshire. He was also introduced to Freemasonry shortly after his arrival, and was initiated at the Goose and Gridiron on the 15th of March 1725. Duguid is also listed as a member of the lodge at the Three Tuns, Billingsgate. Masonic connections may have also played a role in his election as a Fellow of the Royal Society in 1728. His sponsors included two senior Freemasons, Reverend Dr. Jean Theophilus de Saguilier, a past Grand Master and Deputy Grand Master, and Martin Foulkes, another Deputy Grand Master and a Vice President and later President of the Royal Society. Duguid's election was noted in the press. A very ingenious man, an inhabitant of Rome, who was formerly the Chevalier's jeweller. Duguid decided to return to Italy in 1731. He had been contacted by Countess Dorothea Sophie of Newburg, regent of the Duchy of Parma, and asked to value and catalogue a collection of antiquities. Duguid's arrival was noted by the British agent in Parma who informed Delafay. It was also known to the Jacobites in Rome, where his espionage was not forgotten. Despite Jacobite pressure, Duguid did not leave Parma until mid-1733, and, when he did, he was granted letters of recommendation from the Countess designed to secure a safe passage. From Parma, Duguid travelled to Florence to meet with Stosch, who had been exposed as a spy a year earlier, but was granted protection in Florence. Many of those involved with Stosch, including Lord Chesterfield, Lord Harrington, and Delafay, were Freemasons, members of the Horn Tavern Lodge. Stosch also became a Freemason, and after settling in Florence, he co-established Florentine Lodge with Charles Sackville, Earl of Middlesex. Duguid attended the lodge during his time in Florence, as did Martin Foulkes. The Stuart influence in Italy was extensive, and while in Florence, Duguid was entrapped by Thomas Tyrrell, a Jacobite agent, and arrested. The British chargé d'affaires, Brinley Skinner, secured his release, but rather than leave Italy, Duguid travelled south to Rome in the belief that his letters from the Countess would protect him. They did not, and Duguid was seized on entering the city. Duguid's freedom was secured once more by Cardinal Albani, and to ensure that he would not be rearrested, Skinner arranged berths for Duguid and his family on the Dolphin, a naval vessel leaving for England via Portugal. Duguid's flight was approved by London on the understanding that he would be debriefed. There might be gathered some useful knowledge from him relating to the Jacobites and their affairs abroad, and particularly of persons in England and Scotland most attached to the Pretender. However, Duguid disembarked at Lisbon, using his letters of recommendation to obtain entree to the Portuguese court. The Countess's sister, Maria Anna, was Queen of Portugal, and with her support, Duguid secured a position as court jeweller. Duguid had been resident in Lisbon for more than a decade when John Custis, another British agent, arrived in the city from Paris. Duguid was possibly the chosen friend in whose house we dined together and practiced the secrets of Freemasonry. Regardless, Custis mentioned Duguid overtly in his testimony to the Inquisition following his arrest. Mr. Duguid, an Englishman who was born a Roman Catholic and was a Freemason, this gentleman had travelled with and was greatly beloved by Don Pedro Antonio, the king's favourite, and who, having settled a lodge at Lisbon 15 years before, could acquaint them, in case he thought proper, with the nature and secrets of Masonry. Why Custis would mention Duguid is unclear. It may have been to deflect attention away from Custis himself when under interrogation, or to show that Freemasonry was de facto accepted in Portugal, or it may have been retribution. It is not known whether Duguid's disembarking in Portugal was contrary to Whitehall's wishes or at their behest. Either way, Duguid was not arrested nor did he face sanction. His connections at court remained intact and he continued to live and work in Lisbon. Duguid amassed a large collection of artefacts and owned thousands of casts taken from Greek and Roman antiquities, as perfect as the medals themselves. Held in three purpose-built chests, the collection was sold to William Constable in 1760, and it is today at Burton Constable Hall in Yorkshire. Unlike his collection, Duguid did not return to Britain, but remained in Portugal. He died in Lisbon in 1767.
come to the Grand Lodge section of the magazine. This is news from Great Queen Street. First quarterly communication, Deputy Grand Master Jonathan Spence on digital developments, and second, onboarding with Solomon, managing the expectations of new Freemasons. Digital futures. In his in-person September message, Deputy Grand Master Jonathan Spence shared his excitement about the digital developments in Freemasonry. Brethren, I am delighted to see so many of you here today as we continue to move towards a more normal rhythm in our meetings. We all very much hope that things will continue to improve as more and more of our lodge and chapter meetings are able to take place and our members return to a fuller enjoyment of their Freemasonry. Having stated what I'm sure we all hope may be the case, none of us are in any doubt that there is a continuing level of uncertainty on how things will develop with COVID-19 over the next few weeks and months. There will undoubtedly be a few alarms along the way, but as we move from a pandemic situation to one where we have an endemic infection in the population, we need to adjust and adapt our responses, especially in our lodges and chapters. I mentioned both lodges and chapters, as what I'm about to say will surely apply to both the craft and the Royal Arch. A significant number of lodges and chapters have already met, and more will do so over the next few weeks. I'm sure you will all experience, as I have, that individuals respond differently to the current situation. Some of our members in meetings will just carry on as normal, but others will wish to wear a mask or sit at more of a distance from others than before, and I'm sure there will be other responses. It is vitally important for every member of a lodge or chapter to feel comfortable in a meeting, and we should all be entirely supportive of the choices individuals make to be able to attend. The important thing is for everyone to want to attend, be supported to do so, and to be engaged with their Freemasonry. We should also be understanding of those members who may not yet feel able to attend a meeting in person and ensure that they are very much supported in their continued membership. Such an approach will very much live up to our values. As you'll realise from the numerous communications over recent months, a great deal of work has been done over the last year or so in developing and enhancing our approach, both in engaging with existing members and in attracting new members. I would like to thank all those who've been involved in this work, particularly the Metropolitan, Provincial and District Grand Masters, as it's only with their support, encouragement and sound advice that we've been able to make as much progress in these trying times. Brethren, I think we all appreciate it's every bit as important to engage with those who are already members as it is to attract new ones. It is you, our members, through your enthusiasm, who are the best advertisement and ambassadors for Freemasonry. One only has to think of the extraordinary levels of engagement in our communities by Freemasons, particularly in recent times, to realise how critical this is for any organisation that wishes to thrive. Very shortly, an updated members pathway will be rolled out across the provinces and individual lodges, and you've all seen the material sent in preparation for this. This is an exciting development and enhancement to what we've done over the past 3 years or so, and has been warmly welcomed by provincial grandmasters and provincial membership teams, as I'm sure it will be equally well received in lodges. Brethren, as you will also be aware, we are going to launch a national digital marketing campaign. This is a first for us. This campaign will be promoted under the auspices of Why Freemasonry, with memorable sentences that capture the essence of Freemasonry. This builds on the mission statement published with our annual report in April. Creating Why Freemasonry, in other words, why become a Freemason and why remain one, was not as straightforward a task as some might imagine. We all have our own reasons why we became a Freemason and the different aspects that strike a chord within us to maintain our interest and enthusiasm. I'm sure we'll all do as much as we can to ensure this campaign is a great success. It is essential all new members, whether arising from this national campaign or through existing ways of joining, are properly looked after and welcomed into their lodges and Freemasonry more widely, and, most importantly, remain engaged with Freemasonry for many years to come. This is a responsibility for all members of a lodge, not just the lodge membership team. And while on the subject of the lodge membership team, and in particular the lodge membership officer, as you all know, a number of changes to the rules in the Book of Constitutions have been introduced over the past year. One of these was the creation of the Office of Membership Officer, both at lodge level and at metropolitan, provincial and district grand lodge level. What you may not realise is that the jewel for the lodge officer is available exclusively from the shop on the first floor of Freemasons Hall, and I hope those of you who have not yet seen it may wish to inspect it before you leave the building today, and perhaps even buy one for your own lodge if you wish. Brethren, I was recently discussing the nature of Freemasonry with one of my friends who is in their mid-30s, and we concluded that one of the strengths of the organisation is that it is truly intergenerational in its membership. This, together with Freemasonry being a rare facilitator for us to meet others from different backgrounds, religions and races who we might otherwise not get a chance to do so and enjoy their friendship and company, is something of which we must never lose sight. Notwithstanding the tragedies, difficulties and challenges of the last 18 months, brethren, we have an opportunity to ensure Freemasonry thrives. We should not aspire to return to the status quo prevailing before the pandemic. That would be a failure of imagination on all our parts. We must aim to be better and stronger than we were before, with strong member engagement, thriving lodges and chapters, with every member engaged and looking forward with anticipation to the next meeting, and a convivial meal afterwards. Our aim must be to become an organisation with members who continue to act with confidence. This is the raison d'etre of the updated members pathway and the national digital marketing campaign. I would like to express my gratitude to all the members of the working parties who have contributed to these two important developments. I believe every single member can and should be able to contribute to ensuring Freemasonry thrives both as individuals and within our respective lodges. With your support, we will succeed. I very much hope we will all grasp this opportunity as we come out of the pandemic with unbridled enthusiasm to ensure Freemasonry under the United Grand Lodge of England thrives over the years to come. Brethren, thank you.
Page 48. Welcome on board. The Learning and Development Team's worshipful brother, John Roscoe, describes how Solomon satisfies the expectations of new Freemasons while teaching them about Freemasonry's history, traditions, and symbolism. People often talk about life as a journey. These obviously have a start point and usually a destination in mind, too. In Freemasonry, we frequently describe people as having a Masonic journey. Each of us who is a Freemason knows the reason we decided to join. These vary, although interviews with many Freemasons reveal surprising commonalities across individuals as to why they wish to become a Freemason. At core, these include a desire to be with like-minded people with an underlying altruistic or charitable disposition, to become a better man, motivated by curiosity to explore and understand the moral lessons contained in Masonic ritual, tradition, history, allegory, and symbolism, to belong to an organization that has enduring values over time and provides a sense of tradition that gives meaning as part of something that puts your own life in the context of existing before and after your own life. What is that meaning that people seek? Perhaps to achieve a sense that their life has been meaningful and that they have been able to contribute. For many, it is because they were inspired by a family member or someone else they respect who is a Freemason, and wanted to join because of a desire to emulate them as an individual. Others join because of an innate curiosity about the order. For some, it's to recapture that sense of camaraderie and fraternity that they may have experienced in the forces. All of these are the kind of motivations that lead an individual towards becoming a Freemason. Perhaps the generic qualities in men attracted to Freemasonry include an empathic concern for others and a heightened sense of altruism. This journey starts with an approach to a friend, or perhaps through the internet and visiting a Masonic website. The next step is to meet people who are Freemasons and members of a lodge that the individual may wish to join. Traditionally, a candidate would be interviewed and then initiated into the lodge. Their first experience is perhaps likely to be one of bewilderment at what they have been through, but also a sense of being made to feel special, particularly at the festive board sitting next to the worshipful master at dinner, being the centre of attention and guest of honour for the evening. The sense of being included and valued at that point is very strong. However, after that experience, the new initiate may sometimes begin to experience small disappointments, such as being told to learn the answers to questions for subsequent degrees, but otherwise not being told very much, and being asked to leave the lodge room when other ceremonies are being conducted. Nowadays, it is expected and good practice that someone who is more experienced sits out with them to keep them company, but this does not always happen. Similarly, at the bar and festive board, they may sometimes feel a little left out unless their proposer or others ensure that they are looked after. Sometimes, the new Freemason experiences the responsibility of having to integrate themselves into the pre-established social network of the lodge, rather than being brought in and included. Research shows that reciprocity is a key factor in sound, enduring relationships. Therefore, those who hold the values that attract them to Freemasonry also expect those values to be demonstrated towards them. Surveys conducted for FMT in 2015-16 indicated that the most important areas of concern for members were mutual respect for each other, together with the sense of feeling personally valued, being with like-minded people, meeting people from different backgrounds to their own, and pride in their membership of the craft. Equally important to the social relationships was the desire to learn about Masonic symbolism and history, and their relation to the ethical and moral ethos of Freemasonry. In business, people joining new companies often go through a process called onboarding, what used to be called induction. This is also a concept that is increasingly being used to describe the journey that the new Freemason makes through their initiation and subsequent ceremonies of passing and raising. In many provinces and districts, the importance of social relationships is well recognized, and people seeking to become Freemasons are often invited to informal social events or white table nights in order to get to know members of the lodge before they join. Equally, the importance of family support is well recognized, and initial interviews often take place with the partner as well as with the man seeking to become a Freemason, to ensure that the commitment and expectations are clear. Similarly, after initiation in many provinces, care is taken to invite the new Freemason to other lodges to watch people being initiated and have the opportunity to see this important moment from another perspective. This step is repeated after they've been passed and raised. All of this cements the nature of the reciprocal relationship based on the mutual respect and friendship that binds us into this fraternity. What perhaps has been missing is the need to satisfy the curiosity for understanding the craft, which is embedded in the ritual and symbolism of Freemasonry, as well as in the traditional history. However, exploring and understanding the ritual needs the bedrock of that sense of fraternity described above, if it is to flourish. Recently, the Learning and Development Team at the United Grand Lodge of England have introduced onboarding courses for new Freemasons, covering all 3 degrees and soon to include companions new to the Royal Arch. Enrollment is straightforward. Each course comprises a number of sections with quizzes to test your knowledge. Feedback suggests that people value the sessions and enjoy the interactive nature of the way they are presented. Each course is structured in a way that helps to develop and expand on the lessons and symbolism of the degree through which they have just passed. The courses can be completed at your own pace, and they help you explore the symbolism in order to find ways that assist you in your own personal journey towards becoming a better person. Although this takes place on the Solomon platform, in an ideal world, such opportunity should also be available within provinces via the internet or locally at Masonic centres, rather than at lodge meetings. Also, they should be supported with learning circles and discussion groups, either online or in person. Much valuable learning can take place in informal discussion groups, perhaps meeting over a drink, given that, originally, lodges of instruction were established for exactly that purpose, to instruct and develop understanding, rather than just to practice ritual. If you are interested in these modules, whether you have just completed a particular degree, or even if you are a more experienced Freemason, log in to Solomon at solomon.ugle.org.uk, and links to all the onboarding modules are available from the homepage.
This next section is called The Royal Arch, Thoughts from the Supreme Grand Chapter, and it has one article in it, all about the Chapter of Promulgation. Describing 1834 as a watershed year, Keith Tallon details the standardised ritual adopted to clarify and confirm the Royal Arch ceremonies. The Grand Lodge of the Ancients worked the Royal Arch in their craft lodges from about 1751, whereas the Moderns' Grand Lodge had their separate chapters after about 1766. At that time, the Royal Arch was only open to past masters, and the device of passing the chair was developed that involved a nominal placing in the chair in order to gain entry to the Royal Arch. Passing the chair would either be carried out in lodge or in what was called a previous lodge within the chapter, and the password for entry to the Royal Arch was the word of an installed master. In 1834, a long time after the union of the Grand Lodges and Grand Chapters in 1813 and 1817 respectively, the Duke of Sussex decided to set up a committee charged with the task of clarifying and confirming the Royal Arch ceremonies. In one sense, 1834 was therefore a watershed. A ritual was agreed and a chapter of promulgation was set up in 1835 to demonstrate it and ensure that a standardised ritual was adopted around the country. Prior to 1834, there are a number of fragments of Royal Arch ritual in existence. Information about this can be found at solomon.ugle.org.uk. After logging into the Royal Arch section, you'll find a number of papers presented to Supreme Grand Chapter, including Some Thoughts on the Origins of the Royal Arch by John Hamill. In the 1790s and the first decade of the 1800s, the ceremony seems to have developed from a fairly simple one with a short lecture in three parts to a more complex ceremony and a more formalised six-section lecture. These lectures are not what we know today, but were lecture sections done in catechetical form, that is, question and answer, rather like the emulation craft lecture sessions. Two scripture readings, including one from St John's Gospel, underline the Christian nature of the Royal Arch in the late 1700s and early 1800s. Some of the Christian references disappeared even before 1834. To give a flavour of the pre-1834 ceremony and to provide insight into how things were done, I quote from Bernard Jones's Freemason's Book of the Royal Arch. The quote runs as follows. The first principle directs that the sojourners be well bound and provided with lifelines and supplied with proper refreshment to assist them in their labours. These sojourners each have a glass of wine and are instructed in the use of the lifelines. Almost a pity, then, that in 1834 things changed, although the consumption of alcohol during the exaltation ceremony itself is no longer recommended by Supreme Grand Chapter. Differences in working clearly existed before 1834, and the opportunity was taken to de-Christianise the ritual and make the order open to those who had not passed through the chair of a craft lodge. It then became open to master masons of 12 months and upwards. The craft had already been de-Christianised by that stage, and with the Royal Arch now being part of pure ancient masonry, it followed that the Royal Arch must also be open to all faiths. The committee reported, and the ceremonies were agreed and signed, Augustus by the Duke of Sussex as Grand Master Zed on 2nd of November 1834. Supreme Grand Chapter resolved on the 4th of November 1835 that this ritual contained the ceremonies of the order which it is the duty of every chapter to adopt and obey. The problem, of course, was that this new ritual was not made available to companions either in manuscript or printed form. Instead, a chapter of promulgation was formed to demonstrate the new ritual over a period of 6 months. John Hamill, in his talk to Supreme Grand Chapter in September 1996, pointed out that in 1835, companions travelling from chapters in Carlisle, Newcastle, Truro or Wales would have a journey back from London taking many days. He paints a wonderful picture of the companion muttering the ritual to himself in the carriage as they travelled back. What we are able to say today is that the chapter of promulgation was responsible for the present format of the ceremony, but the exact words would have been lost on the journey home. The chapter of promulgation's original manuscript containing the agreed ritual was then locked away and quietly forgotten about for more than 100 years, as written versions of any Masonic ritual were frowned upon at that time. It was apparently rediscovered in the library and museum in 1947 by the then assistant librarian. He took it to show the Grand Scribe E, who then put it in his safe and allegedly told the librarian never to say a word about it. This was still in the dark old days of absolute secrecy. A few years ago, I spoke to the then Grand Secretary and gained access to the manuscript. It's no longer in his safe, and I obtained professional photographs of the original. Because no printed copies were made available, it was inevitable that the uniformity of ritual that Supreme Grand Chapter had hoped for was not to be. But the basis of the 1834 ceremony is still the same as today, and the local variations that resulted from this ill-fated attempt to standardise the ritual now add even more colour to our chapter meetings across the country. And just a note at the bottom that Keith Tallon, SLGCR, is currently Scribe E of the Aldersgate Chapter of Improvement that operates like a lodge of instruction open to Royal Arch Companions. He's also author of a forthcoming book provisionally titled It Is Found that will contain not only a copy of the 1834 ritual itself, but also up-to-date lecture sections for users of both main Royal Arch rituals, Aldersgate and Domatic. We've now reached page 59 in the printed magazine in the beginning of the culture section, which includes 4 book reviews. And before we got on to the reviews, it says at the bottom of the first page, Books Wanted for Review, FMT, Freemasonry Today magazine, welcomes book submissions for review. We will consider all genres, and the only requirement is that the book has a connection to Freemasonry. To submit a book for review, go to the link below and complete the form. We will let you know if we need a physical copy. The book must have an ISBN and be available for purchase by the general public as a printed book, an e-book, or even an audiobook. The web address is freemasonrytoday.com/booksubmission.
The first book review is for Freemasonry for the Heart and Mind by Julian Rees. And this review is by Lionel Brough. Time for Reflection, a stimulating collection of essays. Because Masonic ceremonies are largely about making individuals reflect on themselves, how they should behave towards others, and so on, there has always been plenty of scope for writers to come up with their own interpretations of what Freemasonry is about. A few interpretations are far-fetched or bizarre, others unimaginative or plodding, while others are clear, profound, and illuminating. This book is one of the latter. It comprises a collection of 47 thoughtful, balanced, and well-written essays by seasoned and always readable Masonic writer and lecturer Julian Rees. Rees started in Freemasonry in 1968 in Kirby Lodge, and remained very actively involved in English Freemasonry until 2011, when he resigned in order to join the International Order of Freemasonry for Men and Women, Le Droit Humain. That is neither here nor there, since his intellect, learning, and convictions sparkle as consistently, strongly, and clearly as they have for decades. The essays cover a wide range of themes, such as truth, harmony, brotherhood, spirituality, allegory, light, and love. An underlying thread throughout is that it is important to reflect on the content of Masonic ceremonies rather than trudge through them unthinkingly in order to bowl off to dinner. What Freemasonry has to say to us is rather like a door ajar. It's all there ready to be discovered, but we have to make the effort to push that door open and go in. Some readers may find this book of no interest whatsoever. Perhaps they are what have sometimes been waspishly called knife and fork Freemasons. I found it not only engaging, but thought-provoking too.
And that book, Freemasonry for the Heart and Mind, Sketches from an Esoteric Notebook by Julian Rees, is available from Arima Publishing, 122 pages at priced £15.99. We move on to the second book. It's called This Checkered Existence by Paul Calderwood. A satisfying feast, plenty to attract the general reader. And the review is by Sestrian. Dr. Paul Calderwood is a distinguished member of that distinguished body, Quattuor Coronati Lodge, and was the Prestonian lecturer for 2013. In this, his latest book, he gives the reader a deeply satisfying feast of information. This is the second book he has developed from his PhD thesis at Goldsmiths, University of London. The subtitle, A History of Freemasonry in the 20th Century, tells of its scope. Calderwood has realised his ambition of telling the story of 100 years of English and Welsh Freemasonry magnificently. He covers the story of UGLE's fortunes in that period so very well. It's general and narrative where that's wanted, full of scholarly detail where that's required. And there are substantial appendices, footnotes, and a bibliography running to some 98 pages. However, none of that should be taken as suggesting that this is a dryly academic or only for the research student. The main work, just over 200 pages, is printed in pleasantly large text, and if footnotes and appendices are not really your thing, it doesn't matter. The book succeeds in its aim without forcing the reader to look closely at the sources listed and can be read as a convenient and easygoing Masonic history of the past 100 years or so. Dr. Calderwood wears his academic palms lightly, and there is plenty here to attract the Masonic reader who wants a chapter of 15 or 20 pages to round off the day. Calderwood guides us through the growth of British Freemasonry, which has tended to mirror the waxing and eventual waning of the British Empire, of its royal patronage, leadership and members, and of its relationship with the wider political world. I recommend it without reservation. And the book, This Checkered Existence, A History of Freemasonry in the 20th Century, 1900 to 1999, by Paul Calderwood, is by Lewis Masonic, published by Lewis Masonic, 320 pages at £15.
The next review is for The Green Book of the Elu Cohen, by Stuart Cleland, and the review is by Julian Perry. A strange order. Not Freemasonry, but fascinating stuff. The word Freemasonry has been applied to all sorts of activities for hundreds of years. Some are familiar to many of us, while others are so esoteric, obscure and strange that any connection with mainstream Freemasonry can be hard to see. This book is about one of the latter, the 18th century Order of Knight Mason Elet Cohens of the Universe, founded by the shadowy figure of Martin de Pasquale, 1709 to 1774. The order was one of several branches of a phenomenon known as Martinism, itself named after Pasquale. Another branch was the Scottish Rectified Rite, or Chevalier Bienfaisant de la Cité Sainte, founded in the late 18th century by one of Pasquale's pupils, Jean-Baptiste Villemos, 1730-1824. The background to these extraordinary developments was the rapid spread of higher degrees, often ascribed a Scottish origin, across much of 18th century Europe. Interestingly, Pasquale was excluded by the then Grand Lodge of France in 1766 from the lodges it controlled and, after his death, his order arguably petered out. Between 1770 and 1772, one of Pasquale's first adherents, a French army officer called André de Granville, 1728-1793, wrote a manuscript describing in great detail Pasquale's complicated system, doctrines, and practices. Also known as the Manuscript d'Alger, this manuscript now lives in the Bibliothèque Nationale de France. The Green Book of the Eilu Koan provides the first translation in English of that manuscript, together with lists of symbols, Kabbalistic names, and a catechism. Stuart Cleland writes and translates very well, and the whole volume has been produced to a high standard of scholarship. So, does all of this count as Freemasonry in any usual sense? Probably not, but for anyone interested in 18th century esoteric movements, this book is absolutely essential, if rather complicated, reading.
And the book is published by Lewis Masonic at 445 pages and it costs £29.99. The final book review in this section is A Peculiar System of Morality by George Boys Stones. Aristotle's Contribution, Preston's Role in Our Ceremonies, and the review is by Richard Jaffa. In 300 years, English Freemasonry has produced many outstanding thinkers, but none has had a more prolonged influence than William Preston. The fundamentals of our three central ceremonies and the lectures that go with them remain indebted to him. From the publication of his Illustrations in 1772 until the adoption of the agreed rituals after the reconciliation of the ancients and moderns in 1816, Preston's definitions of a system of morality and illustrated by symbols and veiled in allegory underpin everything. This short book contains Professor Boys Stone's Prestonian lectures for 2020 and 2021. He sets out, with academic precision, how he thinks Preston's education in Aristotelian philosophy guided the drafting of our rituals. He explains how our rituals emerged after a prolonged period of philosophical discussion before UGLE was formed. Boys Stones describes how Preston used the story of the building of King Solomon's temple as an analogy. This illustrates how a Freemason should build himself to be a temple of morality, and how that construction would take place over the three degrees, and how those related to each other. He suggests that means a Freemason has a responsibility for his own education, and in a sense, is both craftsman and temple. He breaks down the allegory to show how each ceremony relates to a different aspect of the temple and its construction. The Hiram legend does not always fit comfortably with Preston's philosophy, although Boys Stones says the ritual offers Hiram as an exemplar of moral fortitude for us to emulate. Although the name Aristotle does not appear in Preston's work, he is never far from the heart of the argument in these two profound and well-researched lectures that provide an opportunity for an in-depth consideration of our rituals that we might otherwise take for granted. And the book A Peculiar System of Morality by William Preston and the Definition of English Freemasonry by George Boys Stones is independently published, 95 pages, and it costs £10. Now on page 65, we start the charity section. We've got five articles here. Three millionth Teddy, and also Quick Off the Starting Blocks, Inclusive Hospice Care for the LGBTQ plus community, and also Celebrating 50 Years of History and Stronger Together.
3 millionth Teddy. Dr. David Staples presented the landmark comfort bear to Peterborough City Hospital. Peterborough City Hospital has been presented with the 3 millionth bear from Teddies for Loving Care, TLC. TLC is a scheme that provides teddy bears for children who attend accident and emergency departments in England and Wales. The scheme is led and funded by Freemasons who also volunteer hundreds of hours each year. Northwest Anglia NHS Foundation Trust, which operates both Peterborough City and Hinchingbrook Hospitals, have been part of the scheme since 2003 and shares the bears with children to comfort them, reward them for their bravery, and to demonstrate procedures. The landmark bear was presented to Jackie James, Peterborough City Hospital's play specialist, by Dr. David Staples, a hospital clinician and CEO and Grand Secretary of UGLE. Jackie said, "The Teddies for Loving Care bears are very special to us in the emergency department and have a wonderful positive impact on children who are receiving care. Children are often first met with a bear when they arrive at the hospital's emergency department, and the sight of the friendly face can help them in a number of ways." Jackie continued, When a child first arrives at hospital, not only are they feeling unwell, but they may also be scared and anxious. I like to meet children off an ambulance with a bear to provide some comfort and help make them feel at ease. The bears are also a great way of showing children what to expect from different procedures, and I've seen a number of bears leave the hospital with matching bandages. Dr. David Staples added, "We are delighted to be able to present the 3 millionth bear from this initiative to the hard-working staff at Peterborough City Hospital. As a doctor who also works at this hospital, I know how important these bears can be, both for the children who receive them and the staff who give them. This simple but effective idea was started by Freemasons in Essex in 2001, and since then has been rolled out across the UK and Wales. The programme also benefits the community through the accident and emergency departments that serve them, and Freemasons will continue their efforts to donate these bears nationwide to children when they are feeling at their most vulnerable. There are 47 regional Teddies for Loving Care programmes across England and Wales that provide teddies for their local A&E departments. Once a hospital joins the scheme, they can replenish teddies on request through their local representative. Some Teddies for Loving Care programmes also donate a portion of their funds towards teddies for minor injuries units, children's wards and hospices. There are even teddies flying on air ambulances. The Masonic Charitable Foundation, MCF, the Freemasons charity, provides central support and administration for each provincial TLC scheme.
Quick off the starting blocks. Fundraising Freemasons are happy to be hitting the ground running once more. Hands up those who've had something cancelled in the past 18 months. For UK charities such as the Masonic Charitable Foundation, MCF, the Freemasons charity, pandemic-related cancellations were more than just frustrating. Cancelled fundraising events have resulted in billions of pounds of lost income for UK charities, and 1 in 10 are now threatened with permanent closure. Thankfully, events such as sponsored bike rides, galas and marathons are now back up and running. And who are at the start line raring to go? Freemasons, of course. Freemason John was pounding the pavements around his home in Durham. He had originally planned to compete in the 40th annual Great North Run to raise money for the MCF in 2020. However, he and his 57,000 fellow runners fell victim to the cancellations that accompanied lockdown. The event was pushed back to September 2021. When I turned 50, I had a health check and the doctor basically told me I needed to exercise more, says John. I started off doing a lot of walking, then increased the pace. I had to keep my fitness up during lockdown because I didn't want the work I'd already done to go to waste. There are definitely moments when you doubt yourself. The halfway point of any run is always a big mental hurdle, but there's an incredible feeling when you cross the finish line, both because you've completed such a massive challenge and because you've supported an important cause. I held that at the front of my mind and just kept putting one foot in front of the other. John was not alone in his wait for the Great North Run. Freemasons, including Wayne, Stephen and Ian, also found themselves caught up in the same wave of uncertainty, with all three signed up to run in support of the MCF. Says Ian, "The money has to come from somewhere. The MCF is brilliant at supporting charities and individuals all over the country, but they rely on people fundraising to be able to do that. This is my second time running for the MCF, and the thought of being able to support such an important cause again is what kept me motivated." Despite finding his days filled up with new dad responsibilities, Stephen also looked to the MCF for motivation. "We've had people from the charities and MCF supporters come into lodge meetings before. You can see the good it does locally." Wayne adds, "It really helps that my province, Durham, were in festival. The postponement meant I missed the festival finale, but I looked to other fundraisers in my province who were in the same boat for moral support." Every one of the 8 MCF supporters involved in the Great North Run crossed the finish line. With reduced income and increased demand for services, the charity world's road to recovery is a marathon, not a sprint. But as these Freemasons can tell you, commitment, determination and enthusiastic supporters can help bring that finish line into sight. Now more events are being given the green light. Freemasons are back at the forefront of fundraising and the MCF is able to change even more lives in communities across England and Wales. And if you want to fundraise for the MCF, you can visit www.mcf.org.uk/FMT56, that's the digit 5, the digit 6, /support.
Inclusive hospice care for the LGBTQ plus community. Helping to provide end-of-life hospice care for marginalised members of our communities. In March, the Masonic Charitable Foundation, MCF, the Freemasons charity, awarded £450,000 to help 16 hospices expand their services to marginalised members of their communities who have historically been prevented from accessing hospice care and support. Among the projects funded was a new partnership between Greenwich and Bexley Community Hospice, GBCH, and equality and diversity charity Metro, which aims to support more LGBTQ plus people, particularly those without a partner, carer, or family support. For older LGBTQ plus people, the discrimination and trauma of the 20th century casts a long shadow, leaving many still reluctant to engage with their local health and social services. And while some may believe that institutionalized discrimination is a thing of the past, the sad reality is that mistreatment when accessing healthcare is still common for people of all ages. In fact, a recent government survey of LGBTQ plus people revealed that 16% had had a negative experience while trying to access public health services, with many denied access. Hospices offer a unique and invaluable service to people reaching the end of their life. Not only do they provide physical care and the help needed to maintain as much independence as possible, they also offer financial, spiritual, physical, and emotional support. GBCH became aware that LGBTQ plus people were underrepresented among those they cared for, but lacked the expertise to tackle the issue. The MCF's £17,000 grant will enable a community engagement specialist from Metro to immerse themselves in the work of GBCH and put into practice a strategy that will widen access to their care and support, as well as increasing awareness of the services available and building links with local LGBTQ plus organisations that can refer people to the hospice. This grant will also improve care by funding specialist training for staff. London Freemason Gary Nielsen recently met with GBCH's John Devlin, who will be leading the project, to learn more about the hospice and how Freemasonry's support will make a difference. "I'm so pleased we've been able to help Greenwich and Bexley Hospice with this excellent project to work with South East London's LGBTQ plus community," said Gary. "Hospices do wonderful work with those approaching the end of their lives, and it's hugely important that LGBTQ plus people and their loved ones will be able to fully access these services. Hospice services have always been overstretched and underfunded, and never more so than now. Freemasons have donated millions of pounds through their lodges, provinces, and the MCF to help cover core running costs and ensure that they can continue their essential work. In 2018, the MCF decided it was time to take this support a step further, teaming up with leading national charity Hospice UK to establish a grants programme that is creating meaningful changes to the sector and making the biggest impact possible. Learn more about our Hospice UK partnership at mcf.org.uk/FMT56/hospice.
Celebrating 50 years of history, the Pro Grand Master honours Connaught Court's golden anniversary at the home in York. In September, the Pro Grand Master Peter Lowndes unveiled a plaque at Connaught Court in York to celebrate 50 years of service to Freemasons, their dependents and communities. "A fitting tribute to our dedicated staff and volunteers in supporting our residents," says Mark Lloyd, RMBI Care Co's Managing Director. RMBI Care Co remains committed to building new care homes to extend their geographical offering, with their first new build in a decade now in development in Reading. RMBI Care Co has recorded their year through an impact report, Our COVID Response, which can be viewed at rmbi.org.uk/about-us/our-impact.
Stronger together. The safety and protection of our members has been paramount throughout the pandemic. RMBI Care Company has navigated its way through the pandemic by working tirelessly to adapt and protect its residents and staff. Last year, the charity's board invested more than £1 million to secure adequate supplies of personal protective equipment, PPE, to ensure staff safety. A successful early vaccination program, now backed up by booster doses, has given all RMBI Care Company Homes residents the opportunity to get protected, while all staff members have been mandated to be vaccinated. Currently, all visitors to their 18 care homes must undergo a lateral flow test, LFT, and receive a negative result prior to meeting residents, and all staff members in their CQC-registered homes in England are tested twice a week. The Welsh homes are closely following Welsh Government guidance. Mark Lloyd, Managing Director at RMBI Care Company, says, "The charity is in a good position in terms of the resilience and commitment of our workforce, the recovery of so many residents and the support of families who were kept fully informed throughout the pandemic. Last year, more than 300 positive media stories about the charity were published. Now, thanks to the confidence in our safe delivery of care, we receive around 40 new inquiries for placements every week." During lockdown, the charity went above and beyond to support residents to maintain regular contact with their families. In 2020, each of the care homes opened COVID-19 secure visitor pods, consisting of rooms split with a glass screen, to enable residents to meet safely with their loved ones again. On behalf of the charity, Mark Lloyd received a certificate of commendation for their outstanding contribution to Freemasonry from the Duke of Kent.
Finally, in this audio version of FMT Magazine, letters to the editor. If you want to write to the editor, it's at the editor, FMT, Freemasons Hall, Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ. Or can you email editor@freemasonrytoday.com. The opinions expressed here are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the views of the United Grand Lodge of England. All UGLE members' letters printed are appended with the contributor's name, his mother lodge name and number, the town where that lodge meets and the province. Please include these details at the foot of your letter and please enclose an SAE for any items sent by mail that you wish to have returned. Now, the letters. The first letter is from Thomas Carr of Annick Lodge, number 1167 in the province of Northumberland. And he says, "Sirs, I have just read the best article I have ever seen in any Masonic publication. The contribution by the Grand Director of Ceremonies, Charles Hopkinson Woolley, should be essential reading for every Freemason, regardless of rank, length of service or experience. Follow his guidance and the atmosphere and enjoyment in any lodge or chapter would be enhanced beyond measure. Congrats on an amazing, constructive and well-argued essay." The next letter is from Colin Bickers of Dependable Lodge number 6325. "Sirs, the challenges of the past 18 months to our Masonic world have been huge, as we've had less contact with our lodges than we'd like. Zoom meetings have been a fantastic means of staying in touch, but we didn't become Masons to sit on our own in front of a webcam feeling a little like participants in an awkward online dating channel. We love Masonry for the camaraderie, the pursuit of perfect ceremony, the ritual of donning a pristine suit, the polished shoes, the well-crafted tie, the learning of ceremony and the pleasure of seeing ourselves or our brothers smash a piece of floorwork, the festive board, the friendships, the support we share. If you feel like me, then you've little enthusiasm left for the online Freemasonry experience. We've recently been conditioned to be afraid of others. We've become insular, spending the last 16 months learning how to exist without physical interaction. But we now arrive at a remarkable moment. We can finally attend our lodges again, to rekindle the fire in our lives of all that Masonry has to offer. Many of us will happily continue our hobby, 4 to 6 meetings a year, perhaps a few rehearsals and lodges of instruction to see us through. Perfectly acceptable, but a wasted opportunity? I've discovered one of the greatest secrets in Masonry. It can be found, not in my own lodge, but in all the others. Meeting with strangers, forging new friendships, enjoying new experiences in new places, opening our lives to a wonderful world of friends we have yet to meet. Visiting other lodges is one of the most rewarding experiences our order has to offer its members. I didn't join Masonry for a mere 4 to 6 meetings a year or to wave at my brethren via a webcam. I joined to open up a world of discovery, to learn new and old lessons, and to see new and old places, and do new and old things, and meet new people. To have fun, to be happy, and to share that happiness with friends. As we return to our lodges, we must consider this question. Are we content just to return to our regular meetings, or do we open ourselves to the rediscovery of the finest secret of our ancient order? I urge every Mason wearing a light blue or white apron to consider their local light blue or young Mason's cub as the doorway to enriching the Masonic experience by making lifelong friends one would otherwise never have met. If you are a brother of longer standing, perhaps you might remind yourself of the joy of visiting by reaching out to acquaintances you might not have seen at the lodge for a long while. The meetings which stick most fondly in my memory are those in which the lodge has been full, with guests bringing a greater dynamic to the proceedings and festive board. By visiting lodges, we support every member of the lodge we visit and encourage them to do us the same favour. For many of us, it was a long time ago, but we've all knocked on the door and a wonderful world was opened to us. I wonder how many will rediscover some of the forgotten treasures which await behind the door of another lodge not quite so near home. And the final letter is from Tony Baker, MAMDFRCSPJGD. He's the transactions editor of the Bristol Masonic Society. And he writes, "Sirs, I write with respect to the photograph printed in Thesaurus in the last issue of Freemasonry Today, autumn 2021. The caption identifies the photograph as Henry William Makepeace in the regalia of Provincial Grand Director of Ceremonies for Bristol in 1900. However, H.W. Makepeace never served as Provincial Grand Director of Ceremonies in the province of Bristol. In 1900, that office was held by Walter Stuckey Paul, and additional images in Bristol confirm the identity of the sitter. I contacted Susan Snell at the Museum of Freemasonry and provided our local evidence. The donor of the cabinet portrait based her original identification on Grandpa Makepeace, written in ink on the reverse of the print. However, after double-checking resources and looking at our evidence, Susan has confirmed the portrait as W.S. Paul. Working together, the province of Bristol and the Museum of Freemasonry have corrected the historical record and solved this mystery." And that completes the reading of this edition of FMT Freemasonry Today magazine, issue number 56 for winter 2021. Thank you for listening.